Oh, it's a musical interlude with Mary.
We're just waiting for you to come on board, that's all. Miss Show Hog.
Yeah. No.
Yes.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely yes. Yes.
Absolutely not.
You come up with some stuff, you do.
You must be feeling better then.
Sorry?
I said you must be feeling better then.
I'm feeling a lot better. I had what amounts to a migraine for about a week. It just wouldn't leave me alone.
You naughty
constant girl. And, I consulted the doctor. And, they were like, well, with your medication, you can't have this. You can't. I was like, okay, I'll just keep taking paracetamol until it goes away. And eventually it went away.
Naughty girl.
Okay, but I can't imagine that that was doing the trick.
No, not at all. No.
Oh, we suddenly. It's like having Andy Nunny back on the show. I mean, I've been getting drunk on wine and saying Nanny's inappropriate things. Who?
It's Andy Nunny's birthday today.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh,
yes.
I've got some.
I meant
coming.
To send him something. I will send him a thing.
I mean to do quite a lot of things, but never get around to it. Right then, I was going to do something.
Story of my life.
I was going to do something, and Kirby's little icons appeared, but very unusually, not actually saying anything.
I said something.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Something.
Something in
she
the way.
You were ignoring me, as usual.
She moves.
Something
in the way she moves. You.
I have to say, it was very interesting listening to us talk about this story 7 years ago and how our format has changed.
Tough.
Okay.
It stays changed. Anyway, right then.
You read feedback from Facebook, which was strange.
I read feedback from Facebook.
And I wasn't going, master.
Good.
that's slowly evolved over the years.
Yeah, I've got other things to open up. I'll try and do that while the show's on. I'm sure there's something else I need to do, but never mind. I better start because I've got my Facebook live feed thing waiting and sitting, so be quiet. Oh, hang on. I knew what it was. I just remembered what it was. It was the... I'm pretty sure I've got the DVD in the player ready. If not, I'll go to BritBox to view it. Because that's how I watched it, you see. It was much better sat on my sofa watching it through BritBox than sat here trying to stay engaged with it on a little... Oh, what the hell's
have
going on here?
Have you got a DVD player, like, with your main telly?
So you guys get BritBox too, huh?
Well, it says made by BBC and ITV on ours.
Interesting. I didn't know that BritBox was offered there since you guys have the iPlayer and the...
But iPlayer doesn't show old stuff, whereas BritBox does.
Yeah, you try and find old QI and it's all Sandy Toksvig now. You sometimes want to change it up a bit with Stephen Fry. You can't find it on iPlayer.
He's on Netflix. I can't find my Planet of Fire disc.
He's not on Netflix. Netflix have only got Sandy Toksvig now as well.
Have they?
Yeah. Is all of the new Who catalogue on iPlayer?
Yes.
Okay.
New Who is on iPlayer. Old Who is on BritBox.
And all of New Who is on HBO Max as well.
Who cares? I can't find my Planet of Fire
disc.
Except
I'm not going to subscribe to HBO Max.
Can't find my Planet of Fire disc.
I never thought to get BritBox.
Bloody move my Planet of Fire discs. In fact, who's removed my discs full stop?
Don't bother with the second disc for Planet of Fire. It's got the reworking.
I'd be happy if I find any disc at the moment. There's all my discs have vanished. Then I was like, it'll be moaning on Facebook. Know where things are. And then if someone comes along, bloody well moves them. Underneath an autograph of
who do you think would be John moaning Altman. On Facebook?
What's on Facebook?
You said they'll be moaning on Facebook.
They'll be moaning on Facebook because we haven't started yet, and I'm looking for me. That's weird. I had them; they were ready to blast, and then I never used them. But they were just sat on my disk.
Lillian is going to be taking us to task if we don't show up soon.
Yeah, exactly. Hang on, let's have a look at this. Here we are. I found it. Right, I'll just stick that in my DVD player. Okay, now we can get this
And guess what? She just did.
Yeah.
Okay. It says, are you running late on the feedback?
Right. Now you can be quiet. I haven't actually got... I have got... Shush, everyone. Someone's fidgeting outside the door. Right, shush. Oh, it's the DVD Doctor loading. It's probably going to... I'll just turn that down. Right, shush.
APP Services, Lavazzi at boob1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast episode 453. I'm Adam and I am the master and you will obey me. And here's Debbie Melrose.
Welcome aboard, Perry.
Mary Lang.
Won't you show mercy to your own?
And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Logar is a myth.
Zedit. Right, I don't know what's going on with this live
Mary
video.
Mary took my quote.
Did she? Yeah. Right, according to my doodah, my video feed is actually running, so why can I not blimmin' well see it? Ah, let's do that. Now I see. How weird this new Facebook video thing is. You get this tiny, tiny thing, and you have to click on it, and it enlarges it, and hopefully, if you're very lucky, you've got lots of... things coming up down the left hand side of the screen. This week we're and Debbie Melrose is back, everybody. That's because there's one of these.
Yay!
We've got three, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You've got five. She's now also a multimedia video star. when apparently a video of her, mind you, there's one older of me on YouTube, and I starred in a drama production called Machete when I was about 17, 18. Debbie was yeah, I have to say, quite hot, Debbie. I had to watch it again, and then I mopped my brow a little bit.
Thank you. 22 years ago this summer, that was.
Smoking.
I was just confused. It is
confusing. To people who don't know about cows, and the fact that it was an unedited video that my friend Martin, who has all the videos of this. He sent it, and it's supposed to be bad luck following the presenters, but we didn't edit in the gunshots or things happening or anything like that. So we know it's funny, but you know.
Well, the body hanging from the tree.
Yeah, that was Duncan Wednesday going away after he was talking to the interviewer. He got all depressed and went and hung himself.
Oh, nice. Anyway. Imagine how we go from a hot young Debbie Melrose to somebody hanging herself.
Basically, it was a day. The first half of Life in Cows is us on the day chilling, and we're all off work. And that evening, we've got to go to a 60s, 70s night run by my mum, raising money to go somewhere like Borneo. And we spent the whole day going, well, shall we put together some of the skits that we've been talking about?
And the funny thing is that I was imagining while watching at the Kirby thinking that these little facts that they put in about parts of cows are actually true.
I could tell they weren't.
Oh, you could tell they weren't. That's
it's like
okay,
Alexandra
then.
Road with the highest level of stonefall.
Yeah, I know. That was funny. And this car has been sitting there since 16 whatever.
Yeah. That's probably about three quarters of the way in, Kirby, before you realise. Anyway, we're here to talk about Doctor Who, and Lillian Robin says, finally you're late. Should I give her another... No, maybe not. And she says, Debbie's back, feeling better. Feeling better, with a question mark. Feeling better?
Yes, feeling better, thank you. I had a headache for a week that just wouldn't go away.
I've got a headache every time I do the show. It's called Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I wanted to be on last week because it was such a good story.
Well, we need to hear your opinion.
It was one of our best ones last week, wasn't it, everybody? Terry Miles says, good evening, Adam Pearson. And then Lauren X says, yay, Debbie. That's thanks,
yay.
Everyone.
Well, I can tell who's popular on this show.
You are, Mary. You hold us together.
Right, yeah.
You hold us together and stop us going off and completely.
The wet blanket, the naysayer. Yeah, thank you.
No. The glue.
Right, so where are we up to? Sorry, you were about to tell me something, weren't you?
I was about to say how I loved the last story, thought it was brilliant because I remembered it, and I remember this was the first time I met Davros properly, as far as I'm aware, and just he was terrifying then, and in this he was terrifying, and I felt I got a bit more of the nuance of their performance with each other, you know, the way they interacted with each other. Peter Davison was absolutely brilliant. He was on top form last story, and just I love the way they use the music. The whole idea of him spending 90 years in cryogenic freezing, being conscious, was absolutely terrifying. And that almost made me feel sympathetic towards him.
It's a bit like Captain Jack when he's buried in torture. Do you remember when Captain Jack was buried for hundreds of years, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he had to keep dying. Yeah, yeah. That was horrible. That was quite horrible. Just to have that sort of. He still almost says it offhand. I mean, he's still stressing about it, but the way he said it so offhand, and I really enjoyed it. But I could see why at the end Tegan just went, "Yeah, bye. I've had enough. No more Daleks, thank you very much. No more anything."
Anyway, but, Lillian Robin says, "I like you, Mary."
That was top Doctor Who. Loved
Sorry,
it.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Debbie. I didn't realise you were taking a breath.
Just summing up, it was top Doctor Who. Absolutely loved it.
As I say, Lillian Robin said, "I like you, Mary."
Oh,
hey, see?
My number one fan.
Right, I think I might as well bugger off and let you lot do the show, so I never get any credit on this program.
Number one and only.
Right. All right, let's see if my DVD is loaded up, because I didn't actually use the DVD to watch it. This is going to be a rather novel experience. Right, let me do that. Okay,
why am I not showing a picture?
Why are you not showing a picture of what?
Of the video.
You're not showing a picture of the video?
Yeah,
which video?
It's playing, but it's not showing.
Are you talking about Planet of Fire or me?
Planet of Fire, yeah.
Oh dear. So I suppose we'll have to carry on with that, everybody.
Having your own little difficult moment, huh?
the chimes are chiming with gratitude.
Yes. Yeah. You hear the chimes, yeah.
Should I start
close
yet,
the window?
Kirby?
Are they bothering you?
No. It's all right.
Okay.
I might fall asleep, though, because they're quite... And then what happened to Tegan with all those chimes going on in Kinder? Right, episode one. Shall we start?
What's going on here?
I don't. Good lord! You can remember if you play along with what you're doing. I'm sure you can remember what I'm talking about in regards to Planet Fire.
I'm watching it, and I'm sure Debbie isn't watching it.
No, she doesn't care, do you, Debbie?
I never do. We're just listening.
Planet Fire begins with quite a good rendition of a volcano, probably because it is, and a couple of chaps that look like.
Master?
What?
Yeah, it was a volcano at one time, but it's just some smoke bombs being set off at the bottom of the crater.
No, I'm talking about the shot at looking up the volcano at the beginning of the story.
I thought you were talking about them looking down after they climbed through the top.
So a couple of chaps, one of them looks like he may have been in the Bay City Rollers at some point, minus the tartan stuff, and both wearing a sort of mock Arab garb, I'd say, are sort of making their way across the rugged landscape. And then we cut to a beautiful house, which is a beautiful location.
I would love to live there.
Yeah.
Master?
Oh, God.
That's a bar.
Either way, it's beautiful, and Malcon...
That's the reason why I'd love to live there.
Malcon and the chap whose name, Peter Wingard, whose name I don't know, wander in and sort of make themselves comfortable on the bamboo.
Now it's working.
Oh, great. And some lovely camera angles, a deliberate one looking up Malcon's nose to show the chandelier or sort of ceiling decoration that's hanging above their heads.
Apparently, if you go there now, or at least when they did the DVD stuff, but it probably still looks the same even now. But they went there 23 years later, and it looked exactly the same.
Well, there you go. Anyway, basically, this is the little conversation between Malcon, the Chosen One, and Peter Wingard, whose name I forget, just to show... that because he's the Chosen One, I think they show his tattoo, but it's not a tattoo, is it? It's a branding on his arm to indicate that's why he's
Timonov,
the Chosen One.
Timonov.
Timonoff. Oh, Timonoff is the is Peter Wingard. Yeah.
Peter Wingard. Yeah.
And Malcolm.
I said Malcolm. I said Mal. You like naughty people. Oh, well, you need. I need you to rewind this podcast and make it quite clear. I said Malcolm. Thank you very much. Anyway, he.
Yeah,
this
it,
conversation.
It looks like a what do you call it? A keloid.
What?
Yeah, they could just conveniently stick on his arm. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, it's obviously not real, but it's supposed to be a branding of some variety on his arm. Timothy, whatever his name is. Basically, he's the chief elder, and he's very, very.
Timonoff.
What? Timonoff, yeah. He's very, very, not spiritual. Well, he's spiritual, but he's very religious. That's the word I was looking for.
Well, he had an epiphany, didn't he, when he was younger? That's what he was talking about in, like, episode three. He was talking about his epiphany moment.
Yes.
He's, like, the most religious person there.
Yeah. And he gets very cross on anybody sort of tries to, you know, say, well, it's a load of rubbish, this is what you're actually seeing, you know, and sort of, so he's very, he won't sway from his beliefs. Anyway, so these two guys who've traipsed across the wastelands, I suppose you'd call it, to the top of the volcano to peer in, because apparently that's where Logar is. Logar is the god that Timonoff is worshipping. They peer over and find just a bit of smoke, not really much there at all, and they're sort of quite, yes, they think it's funny.
It's not real. It's a hoax.
Yes.
Before you interrupt me, can I just say, Ian Kirk said, being conscious in cryo is like being on hold and I phone my ISP. And Laurie Nick says, I would like to live in a bar too, out of booze at the moment. Yes, I know. Well, you might see, I have posted a TikTok that might relate to what you're saying. Yes, I'm not going to talk. My TikToks have got nothing to do with Doctor Who. I just like to point out. All right, then. So where were we? And, you know, I'm not too old to do TikToks. I beg your pardon?
I didn't know you had a TikTok.
Pardon?
I didn't know you had a TikTok account.
I have a TikTok account.
He posts it all the time.
There are older people than me doing TikToks, so I'm just saying. So, meanwhile, on
Master.
The sea... Oh, I nearly got the end of that sentence.
Well, you went off on TikTok. I was going to tell you this earlier. The smoke bombs. There's more of the smoke bombs as they look over into the volcano. They had permission from, like, this is a park that has. They had to get permission to traipse all around the place, everything, to film there and everything. But they forgot to inform the local police, who came. Blaring out sirens, blaring and everything, thinking that, oh no, it really has started erupting.
Thank you. Right then, that rather does remind me, and I may have mentioned this on the previous version of this, when we reviewed this episode, that when I was, me and my friends did a drama video production thingamajig many years ago, in which I played one half of a detective police duo, and in the scene where we're given these radios, and it was down in the quay area of Newport, and there was a scene in which these two gangsters were shot dead, and the police, i.e. me, just rolled up a little bit too late, and I have my little radio and I press the thing. I said, two fatalities in the docks, request assistance. End of scene, done. Didn't have to do it again. Then I got told off by my friend who is the director, saying, you're not supposed to really press the button. That has now gone around the whole of Newport. Anybody listening to that particular radio broadcast on that frequency would have heard that particular line. So. Oh, Lillian Romney says she's got TikTok too. I said, TikTok, TikTok, TikTok. Yeah, so.
Everybody's got TikTok, 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 TikTok.
Anyway, back to Doctor Who. So, yes, yeah, so they're on a boat in the sea, presumably on Earth, which it was Earth, because they've cut now to Earth, because obviously we were on another planet.
They even mentioned that it's Lanzarote on the Earth scenes.
Thank you. Anyway, so a basket of goodies is being sort of hauled up from the sea. Inside this basket of goodies is a plastic sort of thing.
Could be platinum.
I've never known platinum to look like plastic, but they didn't say it was platinum. Anyway, so it's got this branding on it, that we've seen on the planet. And Guyliner Man, who for some reason is wearing his face mask around his neck, like a lot of people seem to be doing at the moment, funny enough.
Oh, that drives me crazy.
Doesn't seem to sort of be particularly interested in it. But we've I love the way they do a zoom in shot, and next to it is a paintbrush. Of course, that's an archaeological tool, but it's just quite a funny thing. And that, I love that music that, because they're zooming into that logo, they made music. You probably don't remember that.
The music is very different in this one. I liked it much better.
The music.
Yeah, the
music's very, very good in this. I have to say, yeah. Really good. Works well with the story. Then we cut back to that the scene around this house.
I heard you say that yesterday when I was listening back to 7 years ago.
What, the music's good?
Yes.
Fantastic. Right. Where would I get up to? Timothy and Malcolm. Hello. Never mind. They are. There's the distal. Perusing the exterior of the bar and the view therein of the rugged landscape, which of course is very beautiful. I think they remark on the beauty of it.
Have you been there? Have either of you been there?
Nope. Debbie's been everywhere. So, Debbie, it's a
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Oh, is she gone?
No, I'm here.
Oh, sorry, we'll be
have
boring.
Have you been to Lanzarote?
No, I've not been there yet, no. Yeah. My sister has a couple of times.
Well, you should
so
go.
We were hoping to go sort of maybe this year, but no.
I just caught the comment I missed. Terry Miles said tea time was talking about Kirby's little piece he did earlier on when I started yawning. I wasn't yawning because of Kirby, although it was an opportunity to yawn because of, but never mind, back to the episode. So we cut into the TARDIS where Turlough, at least he's got rid of his tie now. The rest of his uniform is well overdue a removal. The doctor is
he just leaves it in the TARDIS, obviously.
Yeah, the doctor's whinging because he misses Teague and obviously been travelling for a long time. And we never thought we'd hear him say those words, that he's missing Teague. yeah. Or imply it after all the time she was in the TARDIS.
Each of the last stories, this one being the third, continues immediately upon the story before.
Yeah.
So all that they're talking about or whatever, there's really not been enough time to miss Teagan.
Probably not. True. Very good point there, Mary. But it doesn't matter. I think he's going to immediately, not so much miss her, know that he's going to miss her. Because, you know, he's sad that she's gone. So then we have a poor old chameleon's gone a bit doolally. He's attached to the to a roundel.
Does make you wonder when they sleep?
What, chameleon? Oh, you mean when they've so they've gone straight from the Daleks to
that's three adventures in a row. You know, so if it's been more than 24 hours.
Yeah, but it's only an hour and a half each one, Mary.
Yeah.
So they don't need to sleep yet.
And when does Caves of Androzani start? Is it immediately after?
Yeah, but they get time in a cell to have a snooze then. So.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so Turlough rips, wants to rip Chameleon's umbilical cord from the roundel, but the doctor sort of says no. But Turlough goes into the console room while the doctor has a conversation with the obviously in pain Chameleon. I love the fact that Gerald Flood does the voice at this stage. He was the chap who did it in King's Demons. Anyway, so Turlough starts panicking, starts pulling out all, because he realizes there's some sort of distress call, I suppose you call it, mm-hmm. from a planet he really doesn't want to have anything to do with. And he basically makes a mess of the TARDIS.
The it's Doctor probably does spend most of this story just being very disappointed with him.
Yeah. Yes, I like the glare when he finds the wires hanging.
Yes,
up.
Yeah.
What have you done? And the funny thing is, there's a scene like this is cutting back to Earth now because Guyliner Man he's made it back to the shore and he's walking up these steps past the couple of Enterprise nacelles, or there might be maybe nacelles from a shuttlecraft. Oh, no, sorry, they're little boys. No, not little boys as in boys that go, yeah, little boys that keep things afloat, boys.
Buoy.
No. Boys.
Buoys, yeah.
They're boys, buoys. Yeah. What are they, Debbie?
Boys.
Thank you.
Well, anyway, you know, I believe the British are right in this case because they're on an island right next to all sorts of ships and stuff.
With lots of boys.
Yeah, yes. lots of boys. Anyway, but these, like, when I saw them, I thought, my God, they look like nacelles. So, Guy Liner Man steps up ashore and meets a favourite that we're going to see over the next few months, Perry. With a, I mean, obviously at the time and until you guys said that her American accent was appalling and didn't really sort of twig it, and now I can hear the appallingness of her American accent. It's yes. It's almost like having to watch Dick Van Dyke doing Cockney. And that chap from Ocean's 12, who was in the Marvel films, him doing the Cockney accent. Ever seen Ocean's 12?
No.
Ocean's 11, whatever it's called. I don't know. The one with George Clooney, and then they have to rob a casino. Hello, anybody there?
Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that one.
Don Watts is Don one. Watts' name. He's in a few of these Ocean's films. He's a black guy who is in who played Iron Man's sidekick and best friend in Iron Man 1, 2. Actually, not 1, because it was a different actor. 2, 3, and all the Avengers films. His name is Don somebody or other, and he played... Oh, God, I can't remember my character's name. He had the other Iron Man suit. Am I just talking to my blimmin' self?
No,
anyway,
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, but his Cockney accent was akin to... In Ocean's 11 and all the rest of the Ocean's film, it was akin to Dick Van Dyke's in Mary Poppins. It was that bad. And both he and Dick Van Dyke have had to apologise for how bad their accents was. What got me, why didn't they just cast Idris Elba? He would have played the character much better and been able to do the Cockney accent.
Okay, I can't comment about Ocean's 11 because I haven't seen it.
Well, you need to watch it.
The Cockney accent.
It's cringeworthy. As is Nicola Bryant's American accent in this story.
Yeah, my nan was a proper Cockney, bow bells and everything.
Yeah.
if we're talking bad accents, if you listen to the supposed stepfather, Howard,
right. Oh, my God.
He really is, but his accent is terrible.
Yeah.
He sounds like New York gangster, the way he
talks. Yeah, but he was a bad actor anyway, so I glossed over that because...
He's been watching Sopranos.
Yeah, I glossed over.
He sounds like he came from The Sopranos.
Yeah,
exactly.
I glossed over it because he's a terrible actor. Anyway, so Lily Robbins says boys, as in B. What?
What? Go ahead.
We're talking about boys, as in B-O-U-Y-S. Isn't that right, Debbie?
Yeah.
So notice I use Debbie for intellectual things. I refer to her for to get in intellectual approval. Yeah, the boys as in those floaty things in the water, B-O-U-Y-S, I believe. Ian Kirk says, boy, B-O-U-Y, I got it right, is pronounced boy over here. Thank you, Ian. And Laurie Nick said her depth...
Americans say buoy.
Laurie Nick says her stepdad accent was awful. New York Aussie accent. From my experience,
New York Italian gangster accent is what I'd say.
Have you heard Americans trying to do Australian accents? That's when they actually do sound like Cockneys, quite ironically. Right. So yeah. Anyway, we're basically deviating from the first appearance of Perry in Doctor Who. I have to say she's okay as acting wise, but yeah, you can hear the certain pronunciation of certain words are totally incorrect. All she's doing is just making every S word end with an R because R's are R's.
She sits on those R's.
She might
R's
as well have been doing a blimmin' West Country accent.
R.
Why pirates? Anyway, so she's obviously this a guy liner man Howard looking after her to a certain extent. Is he supposed to be a stepdad or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah,
he's a bit young to be her stepdad.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
who
the implication was that he is a stepdad, but she's got him wrapped around a little finger, supposedly.
Yeah.
Maybe her mom is a cougar, you know?
Sounds like it. I would like to meet mom. Do we get to?
He's in his 30s. He's definitely in his 30s. She's supposed to be a teenager. But she does play in the teenage. She does play the teenage sort of part quite well. She does come across to me.
The sulky strop.
Yeah, she's really stroppy, isn't she? You
know, Tina has a lot of
Big Finish stories. You get to meet her mother, but not on screen.
No, that's interesting.
Cool, okay.
Thank you.
Timonov has a lot of eyeliner too.
Oh, does he? Oh, he does. Yes, that's fair enough. Lillian Robbins says it's Booey here. Thank you, Lillian. And anyway, back to Perry.
Right. Booey, it's Booey. Boy. Shout it's out. Floaty thing in the sea. It's fine.
Floaty thing in the sea is best. there's a conversation between Guy Linerman and Perry, and Guy Linerman cons Perry and says, okay, yeah, you can go on this trip. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Turlough are skulking around in the TARDIS, and the Doctor has a component in his hand. I can't remember what the component is now. It looks like a little mini tricorder.
It's a thing to spot whatever the device is that's causing.
Oh yes, so basically spotting the platinum thing that they found in the sea. So that's what causes them to land in Lanzarote. And then Howard leaves very inappropriately, and a young girl on her own in a boat, marooned in a lagoon-y sort of place.
Yes, what a responsible stepdad.
Yeah, very responsible. So let's just leave this poor girl on her own, no food, nowhere to go to the toilet or anything like that. So basically so she can miss her flight. Then we meet all the other extras in the while Malcon is doing a little speech, and then these guys come back and tell them that Logar's a myth because they've seen that there's nothing in the volcano. The Doctor and Turlough have wearing new clothes. Mrs. Turlough, the Doctor's just taking his coat off and is wearing a snazzy sort of waistcoat. But Turlough, I think that's definitely not the shirt he was wearing for school, or the shorts for that matter. Finally, he probably smelt a little bit better at this point.
And he's wearing a swimsuit underneath.
Well, it would be it's Lanzarote. Everybody, or most people, wear some sort of swim clothes. Although the weather didn't look really, really good during these particular scenes.
Perry's wearing some swim clothes.
Well, again, it's Lanzarote. You would expect to be wearing swim clothes somewhere on your person. So the Doctor's poking around some archaeologicals. And has a conversation with Guy Linerman and his little mate, and and then he's still trying to find the particular thing that's causing these things. Perry has a bag of a plastic bag, and she has a wallet with some money in it, and a passport with a very amusing photograph of her plaited and younger self in it, and she cunningly comes up with a plan. Which is quite a good thing to say, because Nicola Bryant was in Blackadder, the Christmas Carol.
Blackadder's Christmas Carol. Yeah, she was. I forgot about that.
Chameleon, meanwhile, is feeling a bit better. He's on his feet. Perry has stripped off, and I had to watch these scenes quite slowly, because obviously it was a bit nippy in the in that particular lagoon. And I have to say, nowadays, the DVD and resolution and pausing those bits is quite a treat. And if anybody wants to know, Ben Shoveler did make up a Facebook group called Nicholas Norks. That's before we had a female representatives on the show, I just like to point out. But yes.
I have linked to it from the feedback request.
Oh, what?
I put a link to that Facebook page.
God, that might get kicked off Facebook now. You shouldn't have done that. It's a secret group for us guys. I don't really think that. Oh my God, there's people who are celebrities in our group. If they've seen that, I might get back to Miss Bryant, and we might get sued.
We posted it before.
Yeah, that's before we had celebrities in the blimmin' group. What if Simon Fisher-Becker, who you might be friends with her, and he might say, "Oh, there's a group on Facebook, Nicola."
He's probably more than aware that there's probably more than one or two.
Anyway, so thankfully for us guys, young Nicola swims or attempts to swim ashore, but she's got a little floaty bag full of air, so she shouldn't get into any trouble.
She still drowns.
She's not that far away from the shore.
She isn't, and she's got the bag full of air.
She should be fine.
She's got a pretty powerful swim stroke going there.
Yeah,
so
she knows what she's doing, and it's a great camera angle. Meanwhile,
Master.
Oh God, yes.
You know the story that happened while they were filming that.
Yes, when she got into trouble, some people nearby thought she was genuinely in trouble because her acting was that good, and spoiled the scene because they went in to rescue her.
Well, not just that; they were German nudists.
It doesn't mean they were nude at the time, though.
Yes, they were.
Yes, they were. Anyway, so the Turlo, meanwhile, is just sort of poking around the console room and notices on the scanner that there's a girl in the water
that
seems
humans.
To be getting into trouble.
Earthlings.
So he obviously thinks, yeah. What is he referring to as Earthlings? Was it the left one or the right one? Excuse me, are you talking over my joke again? Right, that's it. So 1 point deducted in the
point. You gave me a point when I saw you the other day, so that I'm back.
Oh, right, well, it's back to normal then. That's obviously you didn't want to start with an advantage. I'll say the joke again for the hard of hearing. Yes, so which Earthling was he talking about? Was it the left one or the right one when he was that keen to go out and rescue her?
I'm quite pleased I was talking over that joke.
don't criticize his jokes. He'll take points away from you.
Yeah, whatever.
I didn't hear a criticism there. I just thought.
She'll get them back.
No, and she was just admitting it was funny. Anyway, so meanwhile, Turlo runs to the edge of the water and takes off his shorts, revealing budgie smugglers. Yes, some wonderful budgie smugglers. Didn't take his shirt off though. Maybe he was a bit ashamed. Maybe his six pack wasn't quite toned up enough.
I'm sorry. He took off his trousers and revealed those swim trunks. And didn't take his top off. It's like, really?
Yeah.
So, budgie smugglers armed. He goes out and throttles Perry. Sorry, no, rescues Perry. He nuzzles his face into her head as he lifts
his
chin up.
He would reveal his little stick-on thing that we would then see to
her. Yeah, oh, start
you're
peeling
right.
Off.
True. Yes, true. There you go. There was
Mary,
rhyme behind
stop
the reason.
Stop it. Anyway, so... The doctor, meanwhile, has decided to have a drink in a local establishment, and then his little alarm thing starts going off. He leaves some plastic tokens that could come from any sort of board game on the table, and then Turlo and Perry sort of collapse onto the beach from their very short swim. Very
and
exhausting.
And then he takes her all the way into the TARDIS, which wouldn't be at all confusing for her.
Well, he carried her, didn't he? I would have dragged her. Probably less energy involved, and then lifted her and thrown her onto the bed very passionately.
Are you a very big fan of Perry's?
I love Perry. I don't like the American accent now. They've moaned about it, but I love Perry as a character. But she's not as good in her first. None of them are. No, none of the companions in their first stories get the character straight off.
No, exactly.
So I'm not going to hold that. I think she was fine. She was much younger than she was when she left. She was more a woman when she left. She was very much a girl at this stage. I have a feeling in the character development of the character development, that the trauma she went through in Caves of Andra's Army changed her a little bit. And that's how I like to believe that she developed a bit more in the second... her full second series, which we'll see very shortly. But no, I've got no problems with Perry. She's very pretty. I know Nicola Bryant is not apparently the easiest person to get on with, or I've met her and she was charming.
Yeah, I liked her too when I met her.
Yes, I heard that about her, but everything I've heard of her being interviewed and things, she's been absolutely lovely.
Yeah, I don't know. People just, I don't know. Maybe nasty people. Maybe she doesn't sort of relate too well to nasty people. That's probably how I'm going to put that. So if it was us, she'd be fine. Yes, Kirby.
This was her first professional acting job out of drama school.
Well, well done, Nicola Bryant. It's a very good job. Anyway, so.
Yeah, sure.
There's one up.
Being Doctor Who.
Well,
as you can tell by my acting in Life in Cows, I don't deserve to be on Doctor Who.
I wasn't looking at your acting, love. I was just looking at sexy young lady. And bearing in mind that when that was made, I was quite young myself.
22 years ago.
2 years ago? I think it was longer than that.
22 years.
Yeah, I was married. Damn. Right then, so...
Were you living in Cows as well, Adam?
Of course I was blimmin' living in Cows. Can I get back to the doctor?
You should, since you were living right down the street from each other, you should have done the video.
Yeah, I'm very surprised I didn't notice such a hot babe in my circulation in Cows at the time. Anyway,
well,
can I get back to this?
3 crowns. Did you ever drink in there?
I'm not a pub person, or I may well have done there.
That's where I always was.
What, serving or just in?
Sorry?
Serving there or just sort of in there?
I was serving.
I was scared off the 3 crowns because there was an incident in the 3 crowns where Shirley Barrett's boyfriend got into an argument, yeah. And he jumps on their leg and broke it. And
yes.
that put me off the idea of going in there, so I never did go in there.
It wasn't one of the funner nights, but, you know, it's like... You know.
Can we get back to Doctor Who? For goodness sake!
Does it still exist, that pub?
No, it's a pile of rubble. Can we get back to Doctor Who? Right then, so there's talk of this flame that is in this sort of place.
Sacred flame.
Yeah, no.
But story.
When it goes blue, it heals. When it's red, it kills. Like a normal flame would do. But there was a name, but the plate was Sarn, wasn't it?
Sarn.
Hello?
Yes.
Sarn.
Yeah.
Sarn.
Well, what's the name of the planet that the Sisterhood
Karn.
Of Karn? Funny sort of similarity there. Are they related?
Well, I'll tell you, what I read is that there was a novelization made of Planet of Fire,
yes,
in which the Doctor does comment on the relationship between Karn and Sarn.
Cool.
So I don't know if that means that it was edited out for this TV show or whether it was just added later to the novelization. I don't know, but apparently there is a relationship between
the two.
Yeah,
but that would make sense, and I like that, because obviously the flame and the healing properties of it when it
right,
goes.
Right.
So I like that.
Yeah, that's what came to mind right away when I was watching this.
Yeah.
Master?
Sacred flame, flame.
I pointed this out on Facebook, but, you know, I've got several Amazon Fire tablets, one of which is a fire tablet. It's named Sarn.
Splendid.
Several?
Oh, good for you.
Several, yeah.
Well, don't worry. I've got a cactus called Megloss, so can we get back on with the show? Right then. So, Turlo half drags the rather moist Perry. And she's not moist for the reasons you maybe think, because you've got dirty minds. She's moist because she's apparently just come out of the water. But, of course, she would have had to have been doused in water to do this scene in studio. And Turlo just sort of lobs her onto the bed.
Yeah, he seems really fed up with her from the start, doesn't he?
and then he throws the cover on her. She's having a whinge. His bed covers are really covered in salty water, disgusting. And in the bag, he discovers the platinum item, and then he's very rough with her. He grabs her arm. Where do you find this from? As if it's obviously she's some sort of criminal, isn't it? Isn't it? But she doesn't want it. And of course, then he rolls up his sleeve and reveals the matching logo on his arm.
Dun, 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 dun.
Which then explains why he's been wearing a school uniform all this time, so we wouldn't
stick
see
on
it.
Too.
So anyway, the Doctor legs it from his cafe past some very cute looking huts, and Turlo empties out the gadgety thing, and inside there's a little core. Data core, I think he said.
Yes.
Yeah, he says data core.
Yeah. And the Doctor discovers that the location of this thing is the data core that Turlo was holding.
Yes.
Yeah. And dumps everything on the console. Meanwhile, obviously Perry talks in her sleep because she's saying everything out loud, which then triggers Chameleon to turn into Guyliner Man. And sadly for Guyliner Man, he still can't do the accent particularly well. But obviously, you would be confused. I mean, Perry would be confused. The Doctor decides to dematerialize, or was it Guyliner Man? Chameleon, because Chameleon was attached to the TARDIS at that point. And then Perry wanders into the console room, and meets the Doctor. The sort of source of her impending doom, actually, in some ways. No spoilers.
Oh,
Timonoff does some sort of religious chanting, and let's move forward a little bit. And then, he says that wasn't there an earthquake or something like that, and it decides because the flame is up that people have got to burn to... They need a sacrifice. Logar wants sacrifice. Malkon has been trying to hold back these sacrificial offerings, but Timonoff sort of gets his way to a degree, and then they land on land on Sarn. The Doctor and Turlo go off and leave Perry with Guyliner Chameleon, and who then rather splendidly turns into the Master.
That was terrific.
And it went something like this.
I am the master, and you will obey me.
No, I've got that as a sound capture, which I've have had for many years. That I used to play it on the.
Fred didn't know that was going to happen, and she was surprised and pleased. She likes master stories.
I didn't know until he turned that he was going to become the master. And as soon as I saw him turn to the master, I remembered the story. It was so weird. I was sat there going, oh, it's the master. And everything just went, bing, 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 bing. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this one.
Yeah. So again, yeah, funny that
Harry,
looking
at... Harry spends most of the story yelling, who are you?
Yeah. But she does... the way she shows why she's got a strong mind in this, where she's able to resist the master's... trying to take her over and trying to hypnotize her and various things within this story shows that that's why me personally, I liked Perry instantly because she had that sort of fire in her. It's Planet of Fire. Yes, she was a young girl. She was a bit childish. She was a bit sort of whiny as those sort of companions sometimes are. But as a she's pretty and she's, yeah. I love the when she kicks Chameleon's shin and... That was really funny. But then she's horrible to
I forgot for a minute that was Chameleon's, so I wondered, well, how can she do that? And it didn't hurt him.
Yeah. And then she sort of cries out, and he sort of has a moment in which he can't, he's not quite, we're on episode 2 now, by the way. He starts losing it, losing the connection, and then he starts changing again into, back into sort of Chameleon a little bit.
Silver Howard.
It's Chameleon. It actually is Chameleon initially. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Turlough are looking around. Didn't notice the Master's TARDIS materialising. And there's one of the chaps reports to Timonoff that a blue box with a light has appeared. Of course, it's part of their
prediction.
Myth.
Yeah.
A myth, isn't it?
Yes.
So Chameleon has a normal conversation with Perry and then starts changing into Silver Howard, very iconic Silver Howard. I love Perry's facial expressions during this, sort of like, what the hell's going on here? Which is really, really good.
Who are you?
Yeah.
Howard!
So Chameleon's trying to resist the Master. We do see the Master, again, when you're watching this, you think, hang on, we've just seen the Master. Why has this Master got his... his sort of suit on, his costume on. And we think, hang on, the Master's obviously broadcasting.
This is the Master,
The Master's broadcasting it from elsewhere, and this is Chameleon, so that's fair enough. If you've already watched Doctor Who or already watched King's Demons, you'll understand who Chameleon is. If you've watched this episode on its own separately, you might think, what the hell's going on? Because Chameleon's not been in Doctor Who, so you wouldn't quite understand it. But
I certainly was wondering, because I saw this one before I ever saw King's Demons.
Mm. So... the Master gains full control of the Chameleon Master for a little bit anyway, and he strides out of the TARDIS with Perry, and there's another earthquake, and similar to what happens in Logopolis, the Master gets knocked out, or Chameleon in this instance, by falling rubble. Perry,
Master?
Yes.
Speaking of Logopolis, all the scenes on Lanzarote where we see the TARDIS in the foreground and Turlough or the Doctor running away from it.
Yes.
They didn't take the full-size TARDIS to Lanzarote. That's the 3-foot tall one that they used in Logopolis.
Splendid. Thank you for that.
And I didn't take the Master falling because of rubble. I took it because his TARDIS fell over.
Oh, I thought maybe it was a bit of both, Mary.
And that cut the connection to the Chameleon Master who collapses because of the connection being broken.
A bit of both, maybe.
Yeah, because they do show a piece of rubble hitting his head, but I agree with you, Mary.
Yeah.
It's both.
I don't remember seeing any rubble hitting his head.
Doesn't matter anyway. Right, so moving forward. Hang on,
I'm resisting taking a screenshot.
Why? Oh,
good. So the Doctor and Turlough start marching across.
I don't want Mary to be mad at me.
Be quiet!
Because some sort of wasteland. I think that's pretty common.
He definitely gets hit by a piece of
rubble. Be quiet! The Chameleon Master realizes he's not strong enough to lift the fallen over Master's TARDIS, He then gets, I'll move it forward a bit because you've been talking too much, and we're now 44 minutes into the show and only about 35 minutes into the actual episode we're reviewing. It just goes to show that it wouldn't actually be possible to do a commentary on these stories because you lot wouldn't be able to keep up with it.
That's basically what we're doing.
Well, no. We'd be behind all the time.
Part of the premise.
Yeah.
No, we're not supposed to be doing a commentary. It's a synopsis. So, Perry's still legging it, and she spots the Turlo and the Doctor in the distance, and she shouts out, but they can't hear her. And then I love the seeing the Master running. It's quite funny. Sorry, Chameleon running, chasing after Perry, because Perry's taken this component from the TARDIS, isn't she? Which the Master wanted for his TARDIS, the dimensional circuit, and she's nicked it off Chameleon when he got knocked out. Or knocked over. So the Doctor and Turlo meet a couple of characters in this sort of cavey area. And then the Master, Chameleon, catches up with Perry. She decides, instead of jumping off the cliff, try and talk Chameleon back into being Chameleon again. She threatens to throw the component off
She becomes quite TARDIS tech savvy very quickly, doesn't she?
Well, yeah. Obviously knows that this particular. The Master told her that he needed this dimensional circuit thingy. So she knows that that's a circuit. She doesn't know what it does, but she knows it's important. I don't think that's because she's been told it. There's no need to doubt her.
No, I just mean throughout the whole story, she becomes really quite quick at going. Okay, well, that does that. Okay, fair enough. And she just is very accepting immediately of that this tech does this and that tech does that.
Maybe so, but I haven't really got a problem with that. Anyway, so she battles with the Master's mind initially, and we get a guyliner man with that is our guyliner on, wearing silver gloves, and he's going all funny. And then she sort of climbs down the mountain. Trying to move forward a little bit.
That
here,
must have hurt
stalled.
When she slid down that Sarah Jane.
Volcanic rock. Oh, it must be very, very... She must have got a few scratches. And then, the very funny scene when Silver Howard comes around the corner, Timonoth's face when he sees the shiny! all these superstitions coming true. And, right, so Perry... starts getting a bit frustrating, and then the Master turns up and he thinks, oh, it's the Shining's friend. Or is it actually? No, it's not. It's the Shining Turkey. It was the Shining Howard turning back into the Master. So it's all Timonoff's dreams come true at this particular point.
It's all real. Yeah.
And of course, Doctor and Turlo meet some of the tribe, I suppose you call them, and make friends, and Turlo realizes all these artifacts are part of his father's ship. Trion, isn't it, he comes from? And I'm just watching Perry doing her stuff. And then of course I love the scene when Turlo tries to boss Malcon around and say, you can't boss me around, who do you think you are, boss me around? And, well, I can actually, because I'm another chosen one. Oh, baby! It's funny when he gets all bossy.
He's so good at that bit, actually. He's like, you're going to obey me. And he's like, okay.
Because obviously he's older than
him. Yeah.
He's my brother. There was an infant on board. Okay, he's your brother. There we go.
Anyway, there's a scene in which this chap, for no reason whatsoever, just gets shot dead just for saying a couple of words by a man with a pointy thing. And the Master, I love the scene, the Master turns out, walks into the room, and the Doctor's face when he turns round and sees him there is really, really quite cool. And then Perry finally catches up with Turlo and his little brother.
It took me a minute to remember because Turlo recognizes the Master. I had forgotten that Turlo met the Master in Five Doctors.
And in The King's Demons.
True.
Yeah. Right, so the Master orders the Doctor to be killed. in the typical sort of master style.
There's a lot of gloating from this master, yeah. And I love it.
Oh, there is.
The Doctor gets the master gets dragged to the fire pit, and
fire.
So we're moving forward a little bit, and then Turlo and Malcon enter the thingy. I think Malcon then gets shot, doesn't he? Which upsets Timmer, what you call it? Because it's Malcon that says, "No, you're not burning anyone." So they pull them all out of the fire. Malcon then gets shot, and a load of kerfuffle goes on. The Turlo and Perry are watching all this on the monitor in the, it's under the cave or something, under the volcano or something.
Under the volcano, yeah.
And
the volcano, or are they in some kind of control room?
It's a control room, which is in the same building where...
Oh, yeah, for the fire that they've got there, yes. Yeah,
I was confused by that as well, until watching it the most recent time. I realized it's two separate locations.
Yes. Anyway, there's a scene here that I like, because it sort of epitomizes my love for the Fifth Doctor. It's this one.
If I can break the energy link with the Master, this so-called outsider will be nothing but a heap of spare parts. You're on your own, Chameleon. Your power is weakening. Turning to silver. Silver puppet jumping on a string. String cut!
Love it.
Oh, he was amazing in this.
He is amazing. Peter Davison is just fantastic as the Doctor.
He lately comes into his own.
He was good anyway, but in this series, you know, it takes it a level up, and he was brilliant anyway in the first two shows. The stories themselves may not have been good.
Really good.
Last week was amazing, and then this week he is sublime as the Doctor again, and it's just
So
the Master again having a battle, but again they get dragged back to the fire pit. But I think, as far as I can remember the storyline, Turlo manages to get the fire to the healing flame, and they obviously don't get fried. So they get released again, and just moving forward a little bit. And
no,
it's funny. It's really funny off.
They haven't done the healing part yet.
I haven't. No.
Episode three.
But they do. Oh, sorry. But they haven't. Basically, they don't get burned. They get pulled out of the cage, which you could get burned if so. Like I said, but Malcon gets injured, so almost fatally injured, very, very seriously injured, shall we say, by instead of killed by the other bloke, was just killed outright, because Malcon's a very important character. He just gets very, very seriously injured, and I love the bit. There's a few of these scenes where Turlo has to roll up his arm and show this thing, and they hold it up there so I can have a good gawp at it.
Hey, Master.
Yes.
If Malcon is ever pleased, would you say he's malcontent?
Oh, yeah. Where's that tumbleweed soundtrack?
Get the hook.
Where's Robert when you need him? Right. So the Master then drags Perry into his TARDIS. And I can't remember if he got the circuit he needs at this point. Anyway, he's kidnapped. He needs Perry because Perry, he can't do what he needs to do on his own. So he's taken Perry with him, and heads off to the undercave under the volcano. And
He takes his TARDIS there.
Yeah. The Doctor
The Doctor walks there.
Yeah. Right, and inside the Master's TARDIS, there's a little black box, which, to cut a long story short, contains Mini Master.
This is so crazy.
He's terrific. The set's amazing.
All right. So they arrive in the cave underneath.
Yeah, Fred loved the miniature master.
They arrive in the cave underneath the volcano. Perry's sort of really sort of shrugging her shoulders and goes, "Oh, I don't really want to do this," like a teenager would, and sort of says, "I'm not going to help you." But of course, the Master Chameleon has a very exciting thing in his pocket. which he shows her very inappropriately, and she doesn't look particularly excited by it, but there you go. He shoots some innocent little spacesuits. Well, they become innocent little spacesuits just to show what his little object can do. I suppose I don't want that really to happen to me. And Turlough does sort of basically tells Timonoff, look, I'm another chosen one. The other chosen one may be out of action, but you know, you take your orders from me. Timonoff's not particularly impressed with this. And then there's a point in which, somebody was asked, what does the chosen one look like, didn't they? And it was the spacesuits that the master had just shrunk.
Yeah.
What does Logar look like? Not Timonoff.
Yeah, what Logar looks like, not what Chosen One looks
and
like.
And then, that's right, because they get, they bring them into the TARDIS console room, don't they? And then they all kneel when they see this this spacesuit. It's quite amusing. And poor old Timonoff, even though the evidence is weighing up so massively against him, will not change his views at all.
Right.
He's that stubborn.
Yes.
I mean, he's got a great tash, as he said. The master, comedian, has turned this sort of flame to blue, and everybody can see it coming out the top of the volcano, and the doctor has to emphasise it's not an eruption. They head off, although they could have taken the TARDIS, but they can't rely on it, to the volcano.
No, they couldn't take the TARDIS. It's missing a component.
Oh, of course it was. Well done, Kirby.
Thank you.
So
I'm glad I'm good for something occasionally.
But the component that the doctor says is missing is not the same one that Perry took.
No, it's not.
Anyway, so the master is meanwhile trying to do some horrible stuff. Perry shoves chameleon master over, and he stumbles over and falls over, and she runs off. And then she runs into the master's TARDIS. And meanwhile, the doctor, with his half-moon glasses, just starts examining some rock and stuff. I can't remember what he was examining rock about.
He's confirming that there's the remnants of that gas.
What, the healing gas?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So, meanwhile, Perry has worked out that the great big red handle actually closes the doors, so that's quite useful. And she does that, and she then starts examining the big black box. And within the big black box is little tiny master!
Yay!
And he tries to be all tough with her.
Escape from my slave, but you will obey me or die.
No, she won't.
Netter.
Yeah. But she obviously, with the next episode, she realises she's a bit bigger than Master, and he hasn't got his little object, shall we say, because that's currently on the unconscious chameleon. Maybe she should have taken it off unconscious chameleon, but didn't. But chameleon wakes up, and that's right. And then the box falls over, doesn't it? It goes on its side. Was there an earthquake or something like that? And the master starts scuttling around the TARDIS. Starts scuttling around the floor. He weighs in the TARDIS because I remember him climbing over part of the console underneath bit. Malcon, meanwhile, is not very well. And Turlough wears around...
healing gas, obviously.
No, Turlough wears around his neck another symbol. We do banged over the head with this Trion symbol, but I suppose they've gone to the point of putting all these symbols everywhere. So anyway, so the flame turns blue and the doctor goes and steps inside and says, look, it's fine, I don't have to regenerate in the next story at all, look. It will totally heal spectrostroxemia completely, look, I'll just stand in it, woo. And then they say, well, don't waste your time, get Malcon in and we'll get him healed. So Turlough grabs Malcon and...
And a bunch of other people jump in there too. I guess they just didn't feel well.
Yeah, everyone's been slightly out. Yeah.
And there's a really funny scene where the master's sort of skulking around the floor. Perry takes her shoe off and tries to hit him with her shoe. And for some reason does a really crap sneeze. That wasn't very convincing at all. And I never really understood what this needs for. I suppose that was so she shut her eyes and he could actually move from one place.
Yeah, so she wouldn't see him escape. Yeah, they had to come up with something.
So he sort of clambers inside the TARDIS console, his TARDIS console. And, of course, poor old Timur, whatever it's called, Timothy, or whatever his name is, has to bow to his... Timonov, yeah, to his recovered junior chosen one. And it keeps, again, Turlough has to keep showing everybody his thing that he's never showed to anybody before.
Proud of it, yes.
And then
it's mine.
Perry realises that the Master's inside the workings of the TARDIS, so she leaves it. The Master sort of clambers out. It's very amusing scenes where he's clambering out. And then we hear that Turlough sort of tells a little bit of the background story, the fact that he was on a prison ship and he was on the wrong side of him, almost like a civil war, and is the ship. Did it crash or something like that? But he got banished.
Master, Turlough was never on that ship with his brother and father. Turlough was
banished to Earth.
Exiled to Earth for separately.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He basically tells the story.
Political prisoner, doesn't he?
Yeah, he tells the story. But he's been trying to sort of hide, but then he's getting to the situation where he has to call for help, and there is a communication device, which fortunately the power packs still work after all these years. And he's able to get a message to him, but he thinks it's over for him. He's sort of going to end up going back to prison. Hello!
It's good that the battery still worked on that ship. Otherwise, this would have been a completely different story.
Destroyed by the volcano.
It would have all gone down. Yep.
Anyway, so the Doctor and his friend, I can't remember his name, are trying to make their way across the volcanic land to the volcano cavey thing, and they sort of Perry guides them because it is a bit iffy because of lava starting to flow everywhere. But she helps them in and inside there. I'll just move forward. But yeah, this is a bit where Turlough radios Tryon. You can tell in his face that he don't really want to do it, but he has to. The Master, meanwhile, is trying to wake up Chameleon again. And the Doctor goes in to the Master's TARDIS. And then the very funny scene again where he sees initially the little tiny Master looking in the wrong direction, looking at Perry instead of him. And then they cut to the next shot where he is actually, they've reversed the, they've mirrored the image. So he is actually looking at the Doctor. You would have thought they would have thought that to start off with, you know, with that first shot of him when he's looking at Perry, but whatever. I hadn't noticed that.
You're right.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed it either. It
stands out like a sore thumb.
Then they reverse the bottom. Wow. Yeah. Within a few seconds.
Yeah, but I know. It's obvious. But what I'm saying is what made it stand out is where the Doctor's talking to him and he's looking at Perry. And like, what the hell? And then the next thing, he is looking at the Doctor. And then you realize that it's been flipped over.
Compare the two scenes and it's just a mirror image.
Yes, it is. I did say that. Do I get a point?
Yeah, of course you do.
Yes, and well, you see a lot of mirror images as well, because even Peter Davison made a note of this in the commentary. They did those mirror images quite a bit for some reason, and Peter Davison was saying, were my question marks actually backwards?
Yeah. Yes. They are on they are on his, on his braces.
No, they were actually front normal, his unless braces, they flipped the film.
I don't know, but I think on the braces they were, one line was the right way, the other line was not.
No.
I might have to verify
above
that.
Up to his shoulders they were wrong way up, and then sort of about chest level they became the right way up. Yeah.
Well, on the back of his braces the question marks are mirrored. The right hand ones are correct, the left hand ones are not. They're facing the opposite way. Mm. Have we really got to this? We're talking about question marks.
Absolutely.
On the show.
Yeah.
Anyway, Chameleon wakes up and threatens
getting down
them.
In the weeds here.
Come on.
Chameleon wakes up and threatens them all with his little gadget. The Master's little gadget. And, so the little friend has to go back to give a message to, I don't know if it's Turlo or Tibunov or whatever, but the only way he can get back because of the volcano erupting is wearing the Logarth suit. So he gets put in this suit.
I don't even remember that guy's name.
No, I can't either, but it doesn't matter. The master, meanwhile, dematerializes his TARDIS and lands it in the flame of, what you call it, rejuvenation or whatever you want to call it. And then Chameleon... Oh, yeah, then he gives Chameleon, the Doctor wires something up that gives Chameleon a heart attack, which then, of course, he gets begged by Chameleon to be destroyed. I wouldn't normally advocate such a thing because, obviously, the Doctor doesn't do things like this, but he did ask, and he obviously couldn't be trusted to not be taken over by the Master ever again, unless the Master was dead. It wouldn't like be like the Master might have been dead a few seconds later, but hey. But yeah, I can see why the Doctor went along with Chameleon's demand to be destroyed, which he duly is. Dispatched by the Doctor.
Adam?
Yeah?
The guy you can't ever remember his name. His name's Amyand, by the look of it.
Oh, okay. Still don't remember it. So the TARDIS, sorry, the Master's TARDIS. Oh yeah, sorry. What's his name again?
Amyand.
Yand.
Amyand.
Oh, Amyand arrives, and of course, it's the reaction of Timonov, who goes down on one knee again, gets all excited just for a split second.
One of the disbelievers.
Yeah. Another deception. But what I didn't notice, one of the extras in the background, obviously is having a who can have the biggest moustache competition. They're both almost probably a bigger moustache than Peter Wingard. Anyway, it's such a lovely scene. That's so funny. Not meant to be funny, but it is.
I'm reading Running Through Corridors, the second volume, and Toby and Rob make comments about moustaches all the time.
Do they?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, then Thunderbird 4 arrives. Oh, sorry, no, it's not Thunderbird 4. Sorry. And
theoretically, it's a better model in the version on the other disc that I've never bothered watching.
Okay. And Turlo sort of goes into the TARDIS, and then he's greeted by one of his own, and he obviously thinks, "Oh, go on, cuff me up, take me away." And he just does his
last... Well, we don't do that to political prisoners anymore.
Yeah. We don't do that anymore.
Conveniently.
Not this station anyway.
And then we see the iconic scene in which the Master's TARDIS materialises, or the Master himself, his box, sorry, materialises in the flame. He starts growing back to normal size, and then the flame suddenly turns a bit hot, and the Master says, "No, oh, hang on a sec, no, come on, Doctor, you wouldn't do this to your own." And that should have been my quote. You wouldn't do this to your own. apparently he's dead again.
Which Davison just stands there with his mouth hanging open, watching him die.
Yeah.
Yeah. I played that. I turned on the subtitles for when Fred was watching with me last night, and I told her, listen and read what the Master says and draw your own conclusion. And she immediately did. Oh, brothers, aha!
Yeah, it could be. Unfortunately, they never said, otherwise there wouldn't be any sort of mystery to the Doctor Who, would there?
I put forth the idea that can still be, that there are two timeless children.
Could be. But it's nice to have mystery in Doctor Who, isn't there?
I like this.
Anyway, so, because it gets people talking. It's half the fun of being a Doctor Who fan. Anyway, so everything blows up in the Undercave. Not necessarily the Master's TARDIS, which the Doctor could have described. The Doctor is a bit upset by the apparent demise of the Master.
No, Master. The Doctor can't get to the Master's TARDIS because it's behind the flame.
Either way, I'm just saying about his being upset, and Perry's trying to sort of comfort him. And then the Turlo then sort of realises that he's welcome home. And the temptation is just a little bit too much for him, and he has to say goodbye to the Doctor.
Aww.
And
I love the way he charges Perry to look after him.
And
you know, Mark Strickson said if he had known the character was going to get this interesting, he wouldn't have quit.
Okay. Anyway, so he says goodbye and asks Perry to look after him, and then Perry and the Doctor go into the TARDIS, and Perry said, "Well, I'm going to have to go back just yet. I did want to do a little bit of travelling. Can I travel with you?" I suppose so, says the Doctor. But then we see the only corny bit of the story is when he flicks the switch and we go, "Welcome aboard, Perry."
And then my quote, yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Right then. So, as we've dragged things, I'll try and get onto my opinion of this story very quickly. It's bloody superb. And anybody who doubts me on that one will get a slap. But obviously, that'll be a digital slap because I have to do that across the street. This is magnificent Doctor Who. It is totally engaging. Peter Davison is superb. There's a couple of corny bits in there. And I don't care about any potential things that may not make sense because every single Doctor Who story has that in it. This is absolutely banging magnificently, even with the bad acting by Guy Linerman. It's I was totally mouth open, totally enjoying this story. It was superb. I'm not bothered about not remembering the character names. Superb. And what, Peter Wingard, for goodness sake. This is brilliant. The beautiful scene that was done on location. They've actually made use of the location to make it even better. God, this was good. And Peter Davison's magnificent. Two TARDISes. They're travelling all over the place. It's got everything for me. It's brilliant. So if anybody disagrees with me on that one, it's so good. I mean, it does, obviously, we're in a run of good stories at the moment. It doesn't hurt. Good drama. There's not that much violence in apart from the pointless death that was in episode two. But, yeah. And I love the superstitious, you know, you wouldn't waver from his superstitious beliefs. And you feel a little bit sorry for him in some aspect because, you know, because it's a... But it's just great. Love it. What do you think of it, Davey?
Me? Yeah, absolutely enjoyed it. Spot on. I thought it was brilliant. It was fun. Enjoyed it. I watched it over several evenings, you know, just the four evenings quite apart from each other, and just was just sat enjoying it. And I thought Perry was very interesting, and I've met her in quite a few later stories, but this is the first time seeing her as an adult in her first episode, and it was quite...
Do you mean teenager?
It was really good, because I really felt for Turlough in this one. It was just so nice that suddenly we were getting something interesting out of him rather than just the Doctor being cross with him and him arguing with Tegan all the time.
This is the first time for me that you got two companions. So that's actually worked rather well, and it balanced really well, and having the two companions there.
And they had a lot to do. There was a lot. This is what I liked about it. There was quite an ensemble cast. You had the Master in there as well. So obviously... Everything's up.
And he was. This was the best.
You've got the Doctor bouncing off the Master.
Best performance by Anthony Ainley as the Master so far. Oh, absolutely brilliant. Sorry, I just had to say that. I forgot.
That's all right. No, he's. They are fantastic. And I, after enjoying last week's story so much, just thinking, oh, we got Kate Zandrazani coming up. Is this going to be a filler story? Oh no, it was not. It was just absolutely brilliant storytelling and. I've always had a soft spot for Peter Wingard because I absolutely love him as Clitus in Flash Gordon. Absolutely adore him in that. And he seemed quite subdued in this compared to other things I've seen him in. And it was just a nice interpretation of how myths and legends start as well. It's always good for Doctor Who to sometimes remind you that there's no smoke without fire, literally, in this, obviously, with Planet of Fire. But it was just an interesting idea. It did get a bit confusing in some spaces, obviously, when we were talking about the two different control rooms to control fire with and things like that. That got a bit confusing. But I actually enjoyed the music in this.
Oh, yeah, brilliant.
The sets were terrific. Mm-hmm. And Peter Davison was just sublime as the Doctor in this. And obviously, we've nitpicked our way through this one. And there are obviously going to be, you know, this is the 80s. It wasn't the most stylish or interesting time of year, you know, interesting time. But it was nice to see. It felt quite, the whole first episode, obviously, when they're in Lanzarote and everything, felt quite sunny and just nice. And I think I'm missing that personally, missing being on holiday or going anywhere. And it was just a nice escape, this story, pure and simple. I loved it because I escaped Doctor Who land and I was happy.
Yes, I agree, Debbie. What do you think of Alec Kirby?
First of all, I have a question for Adam and Debbie. When did you first see this story? Did you see it for first transmission?
Yes.
First transmission, yep.
Yes. Because obviously...
So you remember your what you thought of it back then?
Yeah.
I was in love with Doctor Who, and it was like that first That first sort of feeling of love when when it was like, yeah. That was me when I'd only just, it's my third year as a proper Doctor Who fan, and so I was just in love with everything Doctor Who.
Whereas I'd grown up watching Doctor Who from the word go, and so it's always been a big part of my life. But it was around these stories that
you became a fan.
I actually was taking in the plot line rather than just sitting there watching Doctor Who and loving everything. And I was taking in plot, and this watching it again as an adult has just been really nice.
Okay, so anyway, as I mentioned before, I went back and listened to us nattering about this story 7 years ago, and at the time my opinion that was the first time I'd seen it. At that time my opinion was, it was okay. I was even doing the it's okay quote. And my opinion has changed. I loved it. Absolutely loved it this time around. It fits in to see things in order. First of all, changes how you perceive the shows. And these three, Resurrection, Planet of Fire, Caves of Androzani, are perfection for the Fifth Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I can really say. It was fantastic. Loved it, loved it, loved it.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. Obviously, I will remember other points I wouldn't make, but probably as we go on. But I forgot to mention about the brilliant direction by Fiona Cumming. There's a lovely on the DVD.
Everyone always says the whole things about the eye candy with the bikini and everything. This is directed by
Nice. That was a bonus.
That just sort of happens on the, just happens.
They made use of the fact that they were able to go to Lanzarote to film this brilliantly.
Makes me want to go to Lanzarote.
Do you? I don't.
Yeah.
Well, I do. That won't happen for a while. But
it looks relentlessly hot to me.
I thought that Perry's introduction was very good, quite strong. Obviously, it's so sad that she can't do the accent, but I thought she was great. She just comes across as probably about 18, 19 and still a bit childish, but got a lot of energy and and I suppose it's similar to Tegan in some ways, and I think the Doctor needs somebody with that sort of energy alongside him, and she fits the bill rather well.
How we get back from multiple companions in the TARDIS back down to the single companion for quite a while.
Yes, indeed.
It works. Well,
until the end.
It does. It always works. But no, this worked really well for me. And I did like Turlough in the end. It was at the beginning. He was underused for most of his time in the series. So it was a good send-off for him, and it was a good send-off for Tegan in the previous story. And
that's
just
right. We're down to a single companion for until the end of the whole thing.
Yeah. So, Mary.
Where's your sound effect?
What do you think of it?
Well, I will say that the settings were very impressive. And like you guys, I was a little confused at times as to where they were exactly. and I did like the music. I thought this was much better music than we had for the previous few stories. But for overall, I would say it was pretty much of a snooze fest. A lot of talking, a lot of exposition, not a lot of action except, climbing up and down, crumbly hillsides, which remind me of the Doctor Who's are usually set, which are in, what am I thinking of? The
quarries.
The quarries, yeah. To me, it was just like a big, hot, crumbly quarry. But for the viewers, and I believe it was released sometime in February or March, as Debbie recalls, it was a welcome sight to see all the heat and the water and all that. So it was a great vacation spot for the cast and the crew, and it was a welcome sight for the viewers, to see that sort of thing. But this has all the earmarks of a series that's trying to wrap up a bunch of loose ends and get rid of Turlough, get rid of Chameleon, and we're getting close to getting rid of the Doctor. So we're just kind of tying things up to get ready, for the new Doctor and for Perry to settle in as a companion. I got a kick out of the nativity play shepherd outfits. But they had amazingly modern haircuts, you know. So, but everything else about them, you know, smacked of, you know, looking like somebody raided a nativity set. And I found it odd. Perry says at one point, she says, "You realize this creature is about to do a bunk," as if these people from, you know, they're supposed to be an ancient culture would have any idea what she's talking about.
Yeah, going off for a bunk. Yeah, I forgot about that line.
It struck me as so odd. It's like, well, what do they think that means?
They're in a bunk.
And I just was very puzzled by the doll-sized master. Because if you look at that control room, how did he get in or out? There's no doors. And how did he get the lid on? that completely bamboozled me as to, you know, what this whole doll-sized doctor was doing. When the doctor and Perry and the guy from the tribe are all looking in there, the doctor could have reached right in and picked him up and done anything he wanted with him, you know, because he was just this small, cute little thing.
Would you really want to touch the master? Nah.
You know, but he didn't. He didn't do anything with him, you know. But later on, when the master then is on fire and being destroyed, all he does is stand there with his mouth open like, "Oh, look at this," you know, he's dying.
Brother.
I don't think it is brother. He says, "Won't you show mercy to your own?" And there are people who would like to think that he didn't finish that sentence, that he actually said, you know, "Time Lord, brother," whatever. But that's all that was written, and that's all that he might have said. We don't know. We can postulate, right. But that's all he says. "Your own," which
In my head canon, it's brother.
Yeah, well, I would just take it to be your own kind, you know, because they're both Time Lords. So I'm not bothered by it ending with "your own," but yeah, it was, I don't know, like I said, lots of talk, lots of explanations, not a lot of action except running around, you know, through volcano vents and stuff. It didn't impress me that much. I do think Davison, you know, is now kind of being wasted. We know he's leaving. And he's only now really, you know, like the last story in this one, really coming into his own as an admirable doctor. That's what I think. It's not a favorite of mine.
Oh, well, not totally Fair disastrous enough. Then.
Well, that's the whole joy of this. We're allowed opinions.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are.
No, we're not. Right, it's time for some feedback. So Kirby has posted a request for feedback on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, which you can join, as have 536 people. So, Kirby, convey your messages, please.
Okay, let me...
You should have been ready. I'm sorry, you should have been ready.
I was basically ready.
No, you weren't.
Oh, someone has a podcast assistant. Okay.
Get on with it.
I have to expand. Okay. First comment is me saying that I have a fire tablet named Sarin. Josh Simon says, could be platinum. Jeff Waddle, Sarin is cockney for sun or sun, S-U-N or S-O-N.
Sarin.
Okay. I don't understand Robert Wentz Jr.'s comment. I posted a link to the official BBC copy of Perry being saved from drowning on YouTube.
Right.
Robert Wentz Jr. says there's no gumbo jack fish in there.
That's because you, in the future story, the Doctor is fishing for gumbo jacks.
Okay, I don't remember that.
Well, it's because you haven't watched it yet.
Well, I've seen. I know the one that you're talking about.
Two Doctors.
It. Yes.
Hmm.
That's going to be interesting when we get to that one, because I both like and dislike the two Doctors.
Whatever. Carry on. Oh, he's lost where he is.
There seems to be something missing here. Oh, my link to Nicholas Norks and Ian Kirk objecting because the pictures I posted from Nicholas Norks were from Caves of Androzani.
Okay, yeah.
Instead of this story. I say I know there are examples from Nicholas Norks. Robert Wentz Jr. has a couple of emoticons.
yeah.
Bulging eyes and a kiss, yeah.
Yes. To call it dull would be a stretch with Jeff Waddle.
Right.
Jefferson Liang says, the recut version on the special edition DVD is okay. I've heard otherwise. I have not bothered to watch that one. Jeff says, never seen it. Is it 10 minutes long? Because that's about how much story is in this.
Yes, I agree with you, Jeff.
Harsh.
Robert Wince Jr. says, drop the mic. He also says, LOL, wow. Jeff says, I'll give you a sneak preview. I don't think next week's is anywhere near the classic fandom says it is either.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Harsh.
Huh?
I said harsh. It's harsh.
Robert Wince Jr., but is next week's case really a 5 out of 5, as some people think? Jeff says,
we'll find out.
No, I'd say 2-3 at a push.
All right, come on, let's talk. What are they doing? We're supposed to be talking about that next week. Deb, tell them off.
Yeah. The comments. Come on, a 5 out of 5 Blake Seven story, a 2 out of 5 Doctor Who story. Robert Wince Jr. says, I'm looking forward to next week's more than this week's. I posted a little bit of interesting thing that the Crocodile Hunter was basically discovered by Mark Strickson.
Discovered
that last night.
Yes.
Robert Wince Jr., my review of Planet Fire. So finally we get around to reviews. The story that we say goodbye...
Sorry, guys. I'm running out of juice. I'll be back in a sec.
Okay, my darling. So I was really quite affectionate towards Debbie then, wasn't I? Make the most of it. Oh, dear. You can carry on. She didn't say stop.
Okay. I was wondering if she was... Whatever. The story that we say goodbye to Turlough and Chameleon. To say we will miss them would be the wrong thing to say. We also say hello to Perry. I did enjoy the location shooting, but the story was lacking. I like the Master. He's a little over the top, but looked great in that black suit. The whole Turlough finding his people, I guess, was the only way to have him leave on a good note. Better than Tegan leaving in the previous story. Find out the Master did cut himself down to size. That would be back in one of my favorite stories, Mark and Lorani. Sad that we did not see more of Chameleon except in his last story when he dies. Could have been a 3-parter instead of 4. All in all, I give 1.5 for story, 1 for Perry flotation devices, 1 for location, rating 3.5 out of 5. Looking forward to caves.
Yeah.
Lori says, I think I blocked out Perry's creepy ass, probably abuser stepfather from my memory. Gross. Mm. Even though it was a semi-cinematic looking and the Master's at it again, it was still a struggle to get through the whole thing.
Aye, Lori.
Caveat. Episode 3 was better than the rest, in my humble opinion. By the way, was this the first time we'd seen Turlough's brand?
Yes.
Yes.
Have you not been watching these stories, Lori? We're supposed to be watching all of them, you naughty woman.
And what's with Anthony's stash?
What? Anthony's stash?
It looks very stuck on. Because okay. I believe it was.
Okay.
I recall being intrigued yet appalled by the Perry character when I first saw her. That opinion hasn't changed.
Ooh.
At least she's sort of quick-witted for a privileged girl in a bikini. And she sort of got to go to Morocco with two British guys. Anyway, on to the next and better episode, as they say.
Yeah.
Ian Kirk says his stepfather would have been the prime suspect when she disappeared.
Yes.
He did have an alibi as the book.
Yeah, absolutely.
He had left her on
nice
the
one, boat. Ian. Ian gets one of them. That's a really good point.
Skipping Ian Kirk's script, Lillian says, are you running late?
Yes, we were. Neil James said something, though.
Planet of Fire. Chameleon returns and is... still really annoying. I do get a little bored of him changing between the Master and Howard. Mini Master is funny, though. Glad they didn't give him a squeaky voice. Lanzarote is a perfect location to double as the fiery volcanic planet of Sarn, so I think it's a shame they actually set the Earth scenes in Lanzarote, making it completely obvious the production team had taken a holiday.
Oh, yes.
The sight of Perry is very welcome, unlike Turlough's shorts. I love when the Doctor pays his bill with space cash. The cliffhanger at the end of part 2 is one of my favorites. Very dramatic and well acted. Other than that, it's okay. Good in places, dull in places. Hello, Perry. Goodbye, Turlo. 3 out of 5.
Excellent.
And yeah, Adam has posted a picture of himself and Izzy with Nicola.
Yeah, but in the background of that picture is Louise Jameson and Katie Manning and friend of the show, Sophie Aldred, who we're supposed to be having on the show, but that seems to have fallen by the wayside somehow.
Speaking of the planet of CERN looking like Lanzarote, that was something that really did confuse Fred.
Yeah, because
she was unsure. Okay, yeah. Are these at the same place at the same time?
Yeah, but I think they did. They were trying to show that the sort of seaside scenes didn't look like the volcanic area scene. So they were trying to make it not look like it, but it was obvious because
it did look like it.
Okay, yeah. Right then. So we have also some feedback from Robert who couldn't make it on the show this week. Now I have two girls fighting over Robert's feedback, which is lovely. I should, in fact, play the appropriate music for this, which is this. Anyway, enough of that. But we can settle this quite easily, can't we? Right. Debbie, heads or tails?
Tails.
Did she say something?
I said tails.
Oh, tails.
She said tails.
Okay, I didn't hear it. Sorry. Alexa? Heads or tails?
Flipping. It's tails.
Right then, Debbie, you get to read Robert's feedback.
Okay. I enjoy Planet of Fire. I still reckon it's confusing as to where we are, as they use Lanzarote as both itself and the planet Sarn, so they both look like the same location, even though they filmed at different areas of the island. Even the finding of the rather phallic object in the ocean is a bit weird, as, again, it sort of ties it to the same location. And a Perry in a bikini,
exactly.
That made me blush as a young teenager when I first saw it on TV, one of the reasons my dad liked watching the show too. I think that Peter Grimwade often cops a lot of flack, namely as a director, but I think he does a good job as a writer. With all that he has to add to the story, kill off the master, say goodbye to Turlo, use Lanzarote and get rid of Chameleon, I think he ties things together fairly well. I love how they alter the master's hamster cage when Perry's knocked it on its side with reorientating the set. I thought it a bit silly when Turlo's brother is shot. The laser is a really funny angle compared to the weapon it's fired from.
A bit like a Dalek gun, though. That's how Dalek guns work.
I think that Grimwade, with his introduction, writes very well for Turlo, like Chris Boucher does for Leela. And we finally find out how Turlo got to end up on Earth. And I thought Peter Wingard was wonderful as Timonov, such a subdued performance compared to his usual fruity acting. My cat's offering her 5p.
Wonder what it was.
My 18-year-old cat has still got a kitten meow. Such a shame that Dallas Howard died so young. I thought he was lovely as Perry's stepfather. I enjoyed the DVD extras as well, with a nice piece on Anthony Ainley, which was all too short. I must read his biography one day. Davison again is injecting his performance with a lot of energy. It's like he knows it'll all be over so soon and is making the most of it. Can't wait to watch Caves of Androzani now.
There we go.
That was Robert.
Was it right? And well read.
Thank you, Roy. Right then. There hasn't been anything
through dictionary at you like Alan does.
No, well, Alan hasn't sent anything through as yet. So, Mary, you can do Terry Miles's email that came through the 20mb.feedback@gmail.com.
Like a Facebook thing arriving somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So, his says, "Hi, 20 megabiters. Oh dear, Chameleon is back. Thank God it's his last showing. I like that they still use Gerald Flood's voice."
Yeah.
"Oh no, are those the things Ben Shoveler calls Nicholas Norks?" I had forgotten they were in it. "Turlo has at last got his school uniform off, but did he have to put the bungee smugglers on? I know it was hot there, but his shorts were way too tight."
They were.
"It was hot today in England and on Sarn. Tenerife? So I know how they felt. Oh no, contact has been made. Wonderful Perry is a screamer that should keep everybody awake. She falls down small slopes of inconvenience, as Sarah Jane could.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I remember Sarah Jane doing that.
Yep.
So that's where they got the idea for the 5.25-inch dolls of the doctors and other cast members. Good story and great scenery, although the very best bit is at the end when the schoolboy leaves.
Harsh again.
Oh, I really liked him in this one. I hadn't really rated him in any of them, but this one he was great.
Okay, so we've got this.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
As long as I remember to add a burst of noise, Adam's smart speaker is not triggered. I'm like, sir, make me a sandwich.
Okay, you're a sandwich.
Planet of Fire by Peter Grimwood. The chameleon prop is back.
I'm getting better. You're
not fooling anyone, you know.
There's a brief pre-credit sequence of Turlough's relatives crashing on the planet Sarn. Perry's a botany student. I can imagine what kind of herb she wants to study in Morocco. Peter Wingard was in his mid-50s when he made this. I remember when I was young, he looked ancient to me.
Yes.
Timonov is an anagram of A.N. Vomit, or Tyvo Man. In the location shots, Perry's bikini is wet after her swim, but in the studio it is dry, if you look carefully. The master has accidentally shrunk himself while working on a new tissue compressor eliminator and needs to search for a rare gas cure. No rest for the wicked. Why doesn't the miniature master have a squeaky little voice? Because it would reveal part of the plot too early.
Mm-hmm.
When Turlough calls try and control, there is no speed of light delay. It's like they're in the next room or the next studio. H. Rider Haggard wrote a novel, She, serialised in a magazine in 1986. It was made into a film in 1965, and again in 1984, the year after this Doctor Who story is made. She featured a yellow flame, which, when it turned blue, could remove age and illness.
Mm.
Like She, the master is killed by still being in the flame when it turns yellow again.
I'm not dead!
Alexa, did Turlough have a spottiest body in Monzarotti?
Sorry, I don't know that one. Sorry, I
don't Interesting. Know that. We know it was not Perry. Oh,
Jesus.
Bye for now.
Yeah, cheers, Ian.
Yeah, Master.
Yes.
As far as the squeaky little voice thing, and as far as the radio time delay, it's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
It's not just a science fiction fantasy TV program. As we found in an alternative universe, in the Gene Roddenberry universe, there's a subspace, is it called, for when they can transmit faster than the speed of light? Perhaps, I don't know.
Sure.
Because obviously, if you think about it, radio waves travel at the speed of light. Who's to say there's not another form they could use in the future or in other societies that doesn't use a light-based mode, medium? That's the word I was looking for, medium. There might be something that can travel faster than the speed of light that isn't light. I'm rambling. Hi, it's a science fiction fantasy TV show. Right, essentially it.
There you go.
So I think that's essentially it for... feedback. Nothing from Ian, nothing from Alan, but if anything arrives in the interim, when Ian ended up in.
Nothing from Alan.
Hang on, I'm just making sure there's nothing in my junk folder. Here we are. Nope, it's just penis enlargements and stuff like that. Certainly don't need one of those.
What's he going to have to do? I mean, he's got to have a chapter for every single story when he puts out his book.
Okay. Right then, so let's see if anything's come through on the feed. Right then, so Laurie Nick says, pardon?
Adam, if he sends it to you, then I can read it for you if you like.
Yeah, well, you've got to send it to me, and then I shall, you know. Laurie Nick says, The Master in a Hamster Cage. What a great mental picture. We can
go
now...
go out of his little wheels.
Yeah. Now, this is going to be a very tricky one for me, because I haven't really prepared myself properly, but it's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Oh, I nearly played before I actually finished a sentence. Let's try now. Thank you. This is where everybody turns off in regards to the video feed, but hey, we're going to do it anyway. Right, I've got...
What do you mean you're not prepared?
Because I haven't got my score page loaded up, and I haven't looked to see if I've actually saved the original quiz document, which we're not going to do, because I've just realised Kirby's actually listened to the previous episode. So
yes,
we'll have
I
to...
did.
Yeah, so
but
I'm not going to go...
But I knew that it would do me no good, because you don't do that anymore.
No, but if you hadn't mentioned that, I probably would have done so... We'll go back.
Well, then I probably would have done... No, I would have disqualified myself because of the very same reason.
Which would have ruined the whole quiz, wouldn't it? So I've now got a handful of cards, which obviously may have questions we've already done, but who cares about that anyway? Right, so now I've got to change a name on my little spreadsheet. Robert's changing to Debbie. Remember the rules, Debbie? It's been such a long time since you were last on. Do you remember?
Yeah, vaguely.
I mean vaguely. So when it comes to the bonus pot, if there's anything in it, we will flip a coin. We will answer the question first. If whoever gets it and wants to answer it, we'll answer the question first, and then gets the power of the either deductions.
Taking away or giving.
Or giving,
yeah.
Yes, depending on what our little A-L-E-X-A friend decides to do in
we
regards
call
to...
We call that Mrs. A, because it doesn't take so long.
Thanks
Ooh,
for that, Debbie.
I like that.
What?
We call her Mrs. A when
we're
referring to
you. Oh, that's quite clever. Kirby likes that, and I can't find my little card that tells what category
is
what.
Well, if people are turning off the feed at the point of the quiz, maybe yeah. It's not a good thing to do anymore.
Well, shall we ask if people are still there? We've got three people there. Shall we still do the quiz? You know what I'm going to say.
I think we should do the quiz based on... the episode we watched again.
We can't do that because I haven't got time to actually write the quiz.
I don't want to do that, yeah, because I'm going to have to sit there and take 100 notes.
No, I agree with Mary.
You don't need to take notes to do it.
It's, what do you want about? I have to write the questions by what? Shut up. We're going to use these for the time being, or I might even resort to using the questions that are in my book. That's the Ultimate Doctor Who Quiz Book, available as an ebook from Amazon.
Well,
and Lillian says she likes the quiz, and what Lillian says counts, Kirby, whether you talk over me or not. Right then, where's the book? I've got a card here somewhere that's got
What did you say?
You'll have to not talk over me, for one, and two, listen to the show to find out what I was saying. I've lost my card. I can't remember the categories without my list of categories. Why do people have to mess around with my desk? Everything's gone wrong today.
The categories.
I'm not even under my face mask. Oh, gosh. Right, okay, I'm going to have to, I'll just have to wing it. Of course. Alexa, front room light on.
Okay.
Oh, good, I can see. Right then, that's that. Ah, here we are. I can find
just
me dice.
Just ask Mary, she'll tell you what the colours are.
Mary can be my category with AD. Right then, so we've got a dice. It's Mary's turn, by the way. Everybody has a joker. And it falls on the pink one for Mary. Mary, you have a pink one.
Companions.
Now, if this goes wrong, I will resort to Kirby's idea that if I go, Alexa, roll a dice.
Five.
Oh, that's right. Then that would have come up with a green one. That's quite good. I like that.
My Alexa just came up with a five.
Oh, that's curious, isn't it? Well, stick with my dice for the time being, but we do have that backup plan. So, Mary, it's a pink one. It's... Oh, God. Of which companion does the second doctor ask, just act stupid, do you think you can manage that?
Okay, this is a guess, so I'm not going to use my joker. Is it Jamie?
Well, educated guess.
Too,
yes, it was.
And that was my guess too.
Another way that the tunes played in the background by Wes Celebration, of Mary. Funny you say about the listeners turning off. We've got nobody's turned off as yet, so they're probably expecting me to take my shirt off again. Right then, Debbie, you've got a purple one.
Uh-huh. Purple is years and dates.
Yep. Great.
It's like having Islet and Claire on the Generation game, isn't it? Right then. Which French king that the 10th Doctor met and saved from the clockwork robots was on the throne between 1715 and 1774? And that's not the time, that's the years.
We had that one sometime in
the... I don't care, Kirby, be quiet.
Oh. Henry the...
Nowhere near.
Right, Kirby gets a point deducted for interrupting.
Kirby, back off.
Ooh! Yeah, you got it wrong.
Hey, I lost the point. That's,
stop interrupting that. Debbie's questionizing. So you're putting her off. Isn't she? Isn't he, Debbie?
Louis the 14th.
Too late now. You already came up with a Henry answer. But it was the 15th, so you nearly got it there. So Louis the 15th was the answer. But bad luck, you would have got it wrong because you can't give two answers for one. That's not how it works. Kirby.
Master.
Your question is going to be... a yellow one. This is working rather well this evening.
Yellow is episodes and stories.
Yeah, thank you, assistant.
Mary wrote it down weeks ago, but everybody still seems so surprised.
Yes. Lillian Robbins. Lillian Robbins says, I'd rather the quiz be based on the story than Trivial Pursuit. I haven't got time to sit and write questions on. I'd love to be able to do that. No, you can't. We can't, because what if you weren't on the week we needed them? Promising people that anyway. Well, this is always guaranteed. These questions are always there. And where were we? Who's questioning it? Oh, Kirby.
Use your book.
I might have to use. Eventually, when I run out of these trivia questions, we'll have to use my book. In Army of Ghosts, Kirby, what does the basilium gift that Rose gives her mum predict when it changes temperature? What does it predict, Kirby?
I don't remember.
Don't you? That's a very long way to get a sound effect that sounds like this. So the answer is the weather. So there's now 2 points in the bonus.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh yeah, oh dear, never mind. Nobody used their joker, have they? That's interesting. Nope. Right, so 2 points in the bonus pot, everybody. Listen out for drop me a dice. A purple question.
Purple is years and dates.
So, what kids' magazine that ran from 1971 to 1994 is on the tables of the hair salon inside the God Complex? Shall I say it again? What kids' magazine that ran from 1971 to 1994 is on the tables of the hair salon inside the God Complex? So that's a 2 point.
Which would be British magazine, so
yeah,
I
would be.
Have a clue.
Okay, well, sorry about that. It's just on the question.
No idea.
Nobody knows. Okay, so we play the You Are a Bunch of Thicko sound effect.
Oh, charm.
And the 2 points stay in the bonus box.
What was it? Smash It?
Looking. I used to get Looking too. Yes.
Never heard of it.
Don't care. So the current scores are, in the lead of 1 point, it's Mary, and the others haven't got anything, so that's all it happens really. So we have an orange question for Mary.
Orange is cast, crew, and beyond.
Eve Miles played Torchwood agent Gwen Cooper, but which Ninth Doctor story did she appear as an entirely different character?
We just had that.
I don't care. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I can see it. Shoot. Joker, The Unquiet Dead.
Yay!
Woohoo!
What we're after. Well done.
Hey, Debbie, we need to be quiet and let her win.
Why?
Why?
I'll just keep bolting up the answers. That's the way.
Debbie, your question.
Yay!
Got a yellow one.
Oh, God.
Episodes and stories.
Not again. Okay.
Right. In The Age of Steel, which London landmark have Cybus Industries converted into a conversion factory?
Joker Battersea Power Station.
Yeah, there we go. Let's change the points a little bit. Kirby!
Master.
Where's the dice gone? There it is, right. You've got a green one.
Which is Monsters.
Ooh. Rather appropriate, Kirby. I've just dropped my card. somewhere. There it is. So the monster's question is, what is an individual member of the creatures known as the silicon... Sorry, the silence gourd. I'll start that again. What is the individual member... What is an individual member of the creatures known as the silence gourd?
I would assume a silent. I'm not sure because I'm not jokering.
Nope, you're not. But that's right. You got the right point. You got it correct. But there's still 2 points in the bonus pot. And here we go again for a yellow question. We just had a yellow, didn't we?
Episodes and stories.
The yellow question is, in Midnight, what is DD writing in a thesis about? In Midnight, what is DD writing a thesis about? Oh, dear.
Violence.
Is it something to do with paranoia?
No, it's the, as it's quoted, the lost moon of Poosh.
Oh.
And there's still 2 points in the bonus pot as we move back to Mary. The scores are, by the way, in last place are 1 point Kirby, in second place are 2 points Debbie, and in the lead with 3 points, it's Mary. I'm just seeing things coming through. Oh, here we go then. Mary gets a green one.
Monsters.
What creature's brain is implanted inside the Pekin homunculus? Mr. Sin. What creature's brain has Mr. Sin got in his head?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Oh dear, Kobe's going to moan about that one. I cut that sound effect off quite quickly. Go on then, Kirby, I'll let you do that one.
It's a pig.
It's a pig. Three points now. Three points now. I mean, no.
Am I wrong?
No, it is a pink.
I didn't say no.
Oh, okay.
Why would I say no?
Yes, it's a pig. Shut up.
Talons is one of my favourite stories.
Is it? Right then. So, but Debbie, you got a green one too. That's just getting annoying now. Otherwise, I might have to resort to plan B.
I still say that your die has a problem.
It doesn't. It's just the way I roll it. Right then, Debbie, this is yours. It's which London... I've done that one. Oh, no, it's not. Sorry. Green. Which London landmark is the home of Wotan in the War Machines?
Post Office Tower.
Wow.
Glad you remember that one, Deb.
I love that story. I watch that one quite regularly, actually.
And Kirby.
Pasta.
Purple.
Purple is years and dates.
The 11th Doctor nicknames River Song as Mrs. Robinson after a character in what 1967 movie?
Joker the Graduate.
Yeah.
Joker the Graduate.
That's not what it's called, is it? It's called The Graduate, isn't it? Which makes the scores quite interesting now, because everybody's got 3 points each. And essentially, with 3 points in the bonus pot... It could rely on this, or not rely on this, depending on what happens with which way the points go. So, here we go. It's going to be a blue one. We've got a lot of blue ones, haven't we?
Blue is Time Lords.
Time Lords question for the bonus pot. Listen up. When the 10th Doctor was shot by a Dalek and began to regenerate, what did he siphon the regeneration energy into, allowing him to heal but not regenerate?
Oh, I think I know.
Oh, go on, Mary.
Into a hand.
Mm.
Well, that would be the right answer. So, the 3 points, where is it going to go then? Of course, you can't give it to yourself, which is quite interesting.
Oh.
Alexa.
Was it heads or tails? You didn't do heads or tails?
No, you do that after the questions are. Otherwise, you know, it will influence it. Alexa, heads or tails?
Sorry, I don't know that.
Yes, because Debbie interrupted, wasn't it? Alexa, heads or tails?
Tails.
Tails, that's a minus. So who are you taking 3 points off then, Mary?
Kirby.
Go on.
Good.
Yes, I deserved it.
Yes, you do. Looks nice to have someone else take points off him. Brilliant. Okay, so we come back to Mary. Oops, someone.
So who got the points taken off?
Hey? Pardon?
Who got the points taken off?
Kirby. Blue question, Mary.
Time Lords.
When the 10th Doctor... I've done that one, sorry. Didn't shuffle very well, did it? Let's try again. In the event of Emergency Program 1 becoming action, what would the TARDIS do once it reached Earth? So, in the event of Emergency Program 1 becoming active, what would the TARDIS do once it reached Earth? That's the question.
I think I know.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Hang on, we've got to do this. So I'll go on. I'll let you, as you said, I know first. You won't get any points for it, Debbie. But go on, then.
I think I know. Won't it just become inactive and just look like a normal police box?
Yeah, it says it will die. But yes, essentially that's what it is.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So now there's a point in the bonus.
It's getting better.
Debbie.
Yes.
Purple
is years and dates.
Which French king that the 10th Doctor met and saved from the Clockwork Robots? I've done that one. What the hell? Yeah, no, you're not getting that question. Not getting it twice. I'm sorry. Not getting it twice.
I know that one, though.
Yeah, all right. In which year did the...
You need to put these into a different pile of...
Well, yeah. As I explained a few weeks ago, the whole lot went over the floor and got shuffled. So shut your face.
This was the same question in the same quiz.
I know. I've accidentally shuffled them back in the wrong direction. Debbie.
Yes.
In which year did the Jadoon make their first appearance? Was it 2006, 2007, 2008, or 2009?
Oh my God, it's between two of them.
Sorry.
I'm going to go 2007 when Tom came back.
Well done, that's impressive. Right then, so we go with Kirby. Where's my dice gone? There it is.
Master.
Kirby gets... Green.
Monsters.
Who are the Sontarans fighting a never-ending war against?
The Rutans.
Yeah.
Yeah. I temporarily went blank there. Is this right?
It says the Rutan host, but I'll give you that one.
It's the cellophane-wrapped cabbages.
Mm. 1 point in the bonus pot. And the scores are, in last place, 1 point, Kirby. In second place, 3 points, Mary. In the lead with 4 points is Debbie. And everybody's played their jokers. So here we go. It's a pink one.
Pink is companions.
In which story did Leela of the Seventeen, companion of the Fourth Doctor, first appear?
Oh, I know.
Go on, Em.
The Face of Fear.
Ooh!
Close.
I'm sorry, it doesn't say that on the card.
No.
Oh, yeah. People.
But because it's supposed to be a multiple choice, I think I will give that to you, actually. Because the options were, and the multiple court choice, Face of Evil, Sirens of Wen Chiang, Horror of Fang Rock, and Robots of Death. And because you said...
Yeah, you would have gotten it.
You should actually have that one, because I would have said Face of Evil, and you would have said Face of Evil, because you got most of it right, to be fair. So I'm going to go...
That one. I agree.
Sorry, everybody else, but I don't.
You are too kind.
No, it is a multiple choice. It is on here. I thought I'd try it without it to see how you got on, but you got on quite adequately. Right, so 4 points now for you, Debbie. Green.
Green is monsters.
God. Right then, Debbie, are you ready?
Yes.
What was the real name of the planet of spiders that the Third Doctor made a...
I know.
What was the real name of the planet of spiders that the... All right. So what was the name... Basically, what it's trying to say is what's the name of the planet that Planet of Spiders was sort of set on that isn't Earth? Yeah, where they went to another planet. Where the spiders live. What's that planet called?
Announcing it.
Sorry, Debbie.
So, you want the...
name of the planet, yeah.
Something three.
Yeah.
Keep going. Kirby, you have got to stop switching
answers.
And I've got homunculus in my mouth. Meta-homunculus three.
What? It can't be meta-homunculus, because homunculus is to do with the Palons of Wen Chiang, isn't it?
Because we had the word earlier, and that's all I could think of. I know meta-something three.
Meta-something three. Oh, God, I'm all in. That'll do.
Don't give it to me.
No, that's fine. Metabilis 3. I think under the circumstances, that's acceptable.
Metabilis.
Yes, it's fine. Or you would have called it Metabolis, because you have a very strange way of pronouncing things.
If Shakespeare can make it, then Meta-Humpulus.
Meta. You got all but one syllable right. So that's fair enough. Right then, Kirby.
Master.
Purple one for you.
Purple is year dates.
Right, this is an interesting one. In which year did long-term producer of Doctor Who, John Nathan Turner, assume the role?
Is it multiple choice?
No.
This would be 82.
Nope. It was 1980.
Ooh.
Ooh, indeed. So, nothing for you. No points in the bonus pot. We come back round to me. Oh, yes, we do. We got 1 point in the bonus pot. I do apologise, because Kirby got that wrong, didn't he? Right, so 1 point in the bonus pot. Could be the winning one for Debbie if she gets this right. Orange.
Ooh, Orange is cast, crew, and beyond.
Right then, Debbie. Beg your pardon. Sorry.
No, it's a...
Sorry, got it wrong. Right then, everybody. I can't believe it's gone 9 o'clock. We're still doing this. Right then, Jackie Tyler was played by Camille Cordori, who starred alongside Eric Idle and Robbie Coltrane in which film comedy about two small-time gangsters forced to hide in a convent?
I know.
Go on then, Debbie.
Nuns on the Run.
Runs on the Nun, indeed it was. Right.
Okay. Yes. Really? I haven't seen that.
Runs on the Nun.
I haven't seen it either.
She plays Faith in it, a lady called Faith.
Yeah, and there's a very pathetic character. But I love that when she gets shot, she just goes, ow, which is quite funny. And so that concludes the quiz with Debbie as the winner.
No. No.
What do you mean, no?
We didn't flip to figure out which way the points would go.
Oh, bugger.
We didn't.
No,
well done, Kirby. You're not getting a point for that, but well done anyway. Sorry, I was getting all excited then. Okay,
I got it right. Now I've got to decide where the point goes.
Yeah, it doesn't
go to
you.
I was excited too.
It doesn't go.
Finished.
Hang on. I've got something come through. Alan T. Butcher says, I have fed back if you want to go back to it. And then it says, my email planet of misfired earlier. So we can go. What a way to cap the show off. We know now that once the quiz is over, we've got some feedback from... Alan T. Butcher. Right then, where did I get up to? Oh, yes. Alexa, flip a coin.
Flipping. It's heads.
Oh, so who are you going to give a point to then, Debbie?
Harry.
Me? You can't give it to yourself.
Harry.
Oh. Okay, that makes it interesting. So now two of you are now on the verge of victory.
ain't I a stinker for pointing out that he
Yeah, thank you, Kirby. Okay, you can have a point for that. Well done. Here we go. Don't deserve it, but you go. Had to happen.
I'm still
at some
behind,
point,
aren't I?
Yes, the current scores are in the third place with 2 points is Kirby, and joint leading with 5 points each, Mary and Debbie, and it's going to be an orange one.
Orange cast, crew, and beyond.
Right. This is you, Mary, by the way. What was the name of the actress who played Barbara Wright in season 1? And now it's multiple choice. You got lucky with this one. Jacqueline Hill, Janet Hill, Jemima Hill, or Janine Hill?
What? Say those again?
Jacqueline Hill, Janet Hill.
Okay, there you go. It's Jacqueline Hill. I didn't hear that at all. And I'm thinking, wait a minute.
Right.
Her name's
that really
Jacqueline.
Does conclude. But instead of the Debbie winning it, it actually was Mary. Isn't that fantastic, everybody?
That's a rare
Nice one, Mary.
And I reckon the prize for winning the quiz should be the prize, which should actually be reading out. Oh, hang on, I've got two emails from Alan. I presume I'll use a more up-to-date one. The prize, Mary.
And I think you Mary would not have won if I hadn't pointed out.
Do you want to read it then, Kirby?
Give it to Kirby. Kirby, that's very good.
I think you just voted yourself in there, Kirby. that'll teach you, innit, for interrupting. to come and bite you in the bum at some point. Right then, what's his name? Kirby Bartlett Sloan. And here we go. It's on its way to you now. You have it. You have Alan T. Butcher's feedback. What a thrill for everybody.
Let me figure out how to open that up so I can see that.
Oh, yeah, thing. I should have taken into consideration you weren't using a Mac. Damn. Okay, I have two backup plans if this doesn't work.
No, I'll be able to. It's just
a Messenger.
It is a Messenger.
Go Messenger. Don't try to do it now. Don't do it in the little box.
Okay, I see. Bring it up in Messenger on my phone. Duh.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. It is easier to read there.
Yeah.
Is it?
Okay. That's where we do it.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
I can't believe we're instructing him on computer things.
Oh my gosh. This goes on forever.
Listen, Kirby, if you don't manage it, I'll take it over. Don't worry.
You're there, yeah?
Yes.
He's trying to scan through it as quickly as he can.
Oh, get on
just
with it.
Go for it, Kirby.
Chameleon Turlo, get going and get gone. Or, oh, what a lovely summer to be a German nudist. Dear 20 megabiters, Planet of Fire is, of course, a closely studied critique of exploitative religion and its inevitable incapacity to serve its adherents in the face of major problems. This cult of Logar, by distracting the Sarnian inhabitants from studying and mastering the technology available to them, endangers them. In parallel, the Master is likewise trying to use the manipulation of the most socially awkward companion in TARDIS history, the painfully shy Chameleon, who has been avoiding company for months. The Master is shown to be doing this because he is himself a diminished person who sees Chameleon and later Perry as weak individuals who he can manipulate. They prove him wrong ultimately, but at great cost to the, in fact, brave Chameleon. So this type of exploitation is examined being driven by ignorance and by self-interest. Resolving these problems needs confidence and knowledge. It should be noted that while some suggest there are exploitative shots in the story, she was in fact going to swim ashore, and it made complete sense to keep as much of what she had been wearing dry in that plastic bag. And the plan to swim ashore was an empowering exhibition of resourcefulness in the circumstances. Okay, maybe she couldn't swim very strongly, but obviously she knows she can rely on somebody to get her to shore. Also, why would she not sit up suddenly with a start, having woken in a place she doesn't recognize? True.
Mm-hmm.
We also learned that Jason King very much toned down his Pertwee-esque fashion style when he moved to Sarn after that awful scandal and threw himself into the dodgy cult of Logar. Okay, that must mean something.
I'm having a hot flush.
All in all, Planet of Fire is a pretty solid story entwining the two threads of the Sarnian moment of danger and the Master trying to dig himself out of a hole, or at least out of a box. I remember being very impressed on original broadcast. Oops. I didn't mean to down click that, Adam.
Get on with it.
I remember being very impressed on original broadcast by some things in the story. It all is also good that they boldly chose to have a clear and final death for the Master, who had a good run, and we can safely assume now he was the Doctor's brother. He can't come back after being cremated like this, given his life choices. It was an appropriate end. The indigenous Sarnians are a bit patchy, but the employment of Peter Wingard's voice lifts them up a level on its own. Turlo's furlough comes to an end. Despite some very timid attempts to lay down some foreshadowing of this end for Turlo, the whole thing arrives out of nowhere, and that chap is Turlo's brother? Really? It becomes clear that Chameleon is less effective when he actually appears in a story, although he does work all right when he is transformed into someone else. This story is perhaps one episode too short, as who would not want to see the more of Perry's planning and preparation for her escape from the island, and Trollo's heroic rescue of her, and her recovering, etc. Next up, Doctor Who and the Power of Krull Redux, or the Fifth Doctor finally gets going and gets gone. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah, okay, sorry, Mary, should have heard you reading it, but never mind.
Well, she won the quiz, so I was going to read it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to ask, before we move on to news, I mean, this is getting late now. When, obviously, you saw Nicola Bryant at a convention, did you see any panels with her there? I wonder if she was asked any questions about the bikini scene?
Who, me?
Well, yeah, well, have you seen it? Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'm okay. Sure that she was asked.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember when that was.
I had breakfast with Nicola Bryan.
Oh, did you now? I should have a name-dropping
And she talked about how sheltered she was during all of this, that she was not aware that what all, you know, they had her dressed in and all that, that it was not totally acceptable, you know, by everybody. But that John Nathan Turner went out of his way to make sure that she was never bothered by any men, you know, that he always had her, always had a car to take her to and from the sets, and just basically took care of her because he knew that she was kind of innocent and didn't know much. So he never took advantage of her, and he made sure that neither cast nor crew ever said anything rude or did anything to...
Well, he to wouldn't have taken advantage of her.
No, he wouldn't anyway, would he? He's gay. All right then. Okay, thanks, Mayor. Right then, Doctor Who news. Season 14 re-release, the Doctor Who Collection Season 14, first released as a limited edition on Blu-ray in May 2020, is being re-released in the UK by BBC Studios on the 27th of July due to unprecedented demand.
Oh, good. Maybe I can actually get it.
Yeah. And also, quite interestingly, and I was unaware of this, new Doctor Who scene at the Best of Days, written by former showrunner Stephen Moffat, has been released on the Doctor Who Lockdown YouTube channel. It's called Doctor Who Lockdown, The Best of Days. It's a mini episode that features Pearl Mackie as Bill Potts and Matt Lucas as Nardole. So I'm going to have to watch that. There is a link. I can post the link
I'm
on the 20 megabyte.
I'm downloading it right now.
Or do you want to post the link on the 20 megabyte page or shall
I? Oh, I can, if you want me to.
No, I'll do it.
Okay, fine.
Darn, it's going to play now.
Hey, Bill Potts.
Stop it.
It's your...
Right, I've stopped it. Right, what page is it called? 20 megabyte something, isn't it? That we're on?
Thank you, baked potato.
20 megabyte. There it is. I'll post it. Here we go. Posting it. Posted it. There we go. I suppose nobody else has done that. But anyway, that's quite an interesting bit of news. Big Finish warehouse to reopen. Big Finish announced that they are to recommence shipping of collector's edition CDs and box sets to clear the backlog of pending orders amid the coronavirus pandemic. Fish Fingers and Custard, new edition of a fan publication, Fish Fingers and Custard, is now available on PDF. TARDIS Chronicles Volume 1, we're going back about in time. I don't think I talked about this last time. That is a book written, designed and illustrated by Paul M.C. Smith, author of the classic Doctor Who DVD compendium and the New Who program guide. And to try and segue, it's a lot of these publications, not necessarily this one, but you know, Doctor Who books and DVDs and Big Finish CDs can be purchased online from whowon.co.uk. Along with a Doctor Who magazine issue 552, which has the first Doctor with, doesn't actually look like Susan, but I presume it's supposed to be Susan on the front cover. That's about it really for Doctor Who news. We didn't actually do Doctor Who news last week. That's probably why I'm getting a bit confused. Doctor Who audio guide is also out by the Doctor Who Appreciation Society. I think I did talk about that on a previous show. That's that. And of course, our friends at Lavazzi do make some rather fab scarves. I know it's the middle of the summer, but there's also some other good. I mean, Fifth Doctor jumpers for one. It's cricketing weather. Get yourself a cricket jumper that actually is the Fifth Doctor's cricket jumper. What do you reckon, Debbie? Okay, I'll talk to myself.
But are people actually playing cricket during this?
In their minds, yes. In their minds, yes, they are indeed playing cricket.
I hope so.
Yes. Okay, right then. So next week we'll be reviewing, probably for the third time. I could lose track of it.
Pardon? I obviously need to get a new microphone because you're not hearing me half the time.
No, that's a Skype delay, darling. It's nothing to do with your microphone.
Master?
Yes?
We last talked about Kaz Van der Zanni in 2011, episode 82. I was on there. It was you, me, Reese, Robert.
And the days when I used to get a word
Isabella
in edgeways. Wonderful.
Ben.
Okay, right. So, The Case of Androzani is our next story. So, that will be... I'll just check. I'm going to say next week. I know I've got a job on next week, but I don't know if this thing is on a Sunday. Nope. It's Father's Day. But as I'm the father of the house, and I will say my Father's Day present this week is doing a podcast at 7 p.m. We'll talk about the case of Androzani.
That was so long ago. There will be no quiz, so someone can write a quiz based on story.
Right, I'll reiterate. I haven't really got time to do that. I get given tasks when I'm at home, and I have a full-time job. Yeah, but Debbie might not be able to appear on the show next week, and then she would have written all those questions for nothing.
I've not exactly been the most trustworthy of co-hosts, shall we say.
You've been trustworthy, but you don't expect that you have to. I have to be on every week, obviously, but nobody else does, and you can't guarantee that everybody.
You've only missed one
hard to get.
That's why I have to write the questions, if indeed I do, and I haven't got time.
Yeah, Master, you missed one week.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't miss it. Reese tried to hijack the podcast.
Reese, Robert, and I recorded one and then sent it to you.
But I didn't actually put it out, did I? Because what did I do? I edited it in to a 20 megabyte podcast, and I was on it anyway.
Oh, okay. I don't remember that. So long ago.
Listen to the show. That's another thing I'll just say to fans of the show. When you're listening to any of the old back episodes, I think there's a couple of rogue ones in there that don't sound correctly. I think there's one I found accidentally while listening through to the, probably about in the late 300s. Let me know which one number it is, and I'll look here, see if I've got the original sound mix and see if I can redo it and re-output it. Because I think something's gone wrong somewhere along the line a couple of times. I need to have the feed working correctly and having audio files on it.
Yeah, I pointed out a problem with the feed yesterday that you fixed.
Sometimes they drop out and come back in again. But I did upload the file again anyway. So
it was weird, though, because I could find it one way, but not another way.
Yeah, I have every episode on a folder on my hard drive. So,
if you don't remember back before I even joined the podcast, I was telling you, this episode is missing and that episode is missing.
Yeah, I can't remember that, but I think that most of them are intact. Right then, so that's it then. Where are we? This is a ridiculously long show, but there you go. Do apologise. Thank you for taking part, listening and contributing to the show. Please continue to do so. See you again next week. Bye!
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye!
Scarecrow.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.